On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So we bring another week to a close here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network. It's Friday, about a minute past 6 p.m. here on the East Coast. Tonight's live programming is this program, followed by Strictly Confidential with your host, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. He's got a truly fabulous show lined up, as per usual. What a week it has been. Lots of interesting developments. Lots of failures on the part of the so-called professional media. And, of course, as is our usual wont on a Friday evening, from MakeThemAccountable.com, a person who keeps a very close weather eye on the shenanigans of the media, Carolyn Kay. Caro, good to have you back.
Hi, Bob. It's good to be here.
We missed last week, and I apologize for that, but it was rather unavoidable.
No problem.
Well, you know, you take your eyes off of you can't take your eye off the ball with these people, can you?
Not for a minute.
Passport. This passport gate thing is absolutely utterly fascinating on a number of levels. The particulars of the story are just riveting, and how the media have treated it is equally so.
Yes.
I haven't seen a case of these are not the droids you're looking for like this in quite a while, have you?
Well, it's just so funny that, you know, Obama thinks he can take the focus away from other things that aren't so pleasant. I say, oh, see, my passport thing was raided, and then Hillary comes back and says, mine was too. And
well, that's the fascinating part of this. This all breaks. It's Mark Levine did a very very a nice piece of yeoman journalism work last night. This story broke on not on MSNBC, as everyone thinks, but oddly enough, on the Mooney Times.
Oh, well.
And here's...
I guess they're actually capable of doing so. Oh, you know who's in charge there now?
Who's that?
John Solomon, who used to be with Associated Press.
Oh, that's...
I hated him when he was with Associated Press, and then he went to the Washington Post. He's the one that has these big headlines and these big leads, like the ones we used to see in the 90s. The Clintons will be put in prison tomorrow, you know. And then you read down at the bottom, and they really didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Well, it's fascinating, in particular, where the Mooney Times are concerned, Caro, because in the first incarnation of the story which they published, which has since gone down the memory hole, it says that Condoleezza Rice was informed about the passport snooping on Wednesday. And that's the, you know how Google grabs a little chunk out of the story for the links when you Google something?
Yeah.
Well, it clearly says she was informed yesterday, and that is from Thursday's Googling. So it indicates she was told on Wednesday, and yet by the time you get to the story, everything's been polished up and pretty, and she only found out Thursday.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure you remember how Watergate began.
Oh, yes, I remember very well. I remember the first report of the break-in at the Democratic headquarters in the Watergate, and I remember thinking at the time Nixon was involved.
And yet those two cub reporters, Woodward and Bernstein, had to practically pledge their firstborn children.
I think they did pledge their firstborn children.
Yeah, to get to
You've
even.
You've seen a firstborn child of.
That's true.
Bob
that's
Woodward?
True. That's
huh?
true. That's true. Absolutely. And yet, and so they, you know, they had to beg to get to do story number two.
Yeah.
And this thing stinks, Caro. It really, really does because.
But why are we so surprised? I mean,
I'm not surprised. This is what these thugs do. Yeah,
I mean, I know you're not surprised, but why are the mainstream media so surprised? We know that they politicized the Justice Department. We know that they had meetings in against the law. Had meetings in, with White House campaign people. Meeting with people in the various agencies prior to the 2002 election, prior to the 2004 election, prior to the 2006 election, telling them how they could use the government, how they could use government resources to help elect Republicans.
Absolutely.
And they certainly are going to be doing it for 2008. Oh boy, are they going to be doing it. The question is, you know, who was the whistleblower?
That's and
you
and
actually
that
we had the courage to come forward and say, wait a minute.
And it was apparently just a little phone call placed to Obama's Senate office, which I find rather interesting, because it wasn't done on the up and up, and it wasn't anybody. But it, even that doesn't fit. I mean, George H.W. Bush did the same thing to Bill Clinton, so you know it is like father like son.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is all tied up in the government has a lot of people in it who aren't government employees anymore, who don't have civil service protection, who aren't members of any sort of union, and they're brought in for specifically this kind of purpose.
It's to have deniability, to have not have to take the consequences of what they're doing.
Yeah, and so that the Bush administration can say, well, you know, I mean, you can almost see Dana Perineal doing it now. These weren't government employees. These were not Bush administration employees. They were independent contractors, just like those guys hanging from that bridge in Fallujah.
Just like the ones that are electrocuting our
troops. Yeah, just like the ones electrocuting our troops.
Almost said Vietnam.
Oh, my God. But none of it fits together, Carol. None of the initial pieces. And by the way, just in case you were wondering, I don't know, maybe you've seen this already, that paragon of virtue and justice, Michael Mukasey, has already come out and said, what do you mean? We have no intention of investigating this.
Why would we trust them to do so even if they said they would?
Well, there's that, too. And see, this goes back, Mark Levine and I had a conversation about it last night. When it happened to Bill Clinton, there was an independent prosecutor statute that compelled George H.W. Bush to appoint one.
Well, not only that, we have to think about the... Let me tell you about... remind you, I'm sure you know or you were aware and paying attention back then, but that was not the only investigation of Clinton prior to the... 92 election. They also investigated the Whitewater land deal.
Oh, a little bit.
The HW administration.
Yeah.
Okay. And they appointed an independent Republican lawyer, well thought of, well qualified lawyer to investigate the deal. He found no wrongdoing. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
And Bush Daddy was honest enough to drop it at that point. And it was only later when the right wing became so rabid and insane and crazed that, that they brought it all up again and that they got an independent, investigator, independent counsel. And then weren't satisfied. That guy was trying to be fair also. And so they had to get him out of there. And that's when they appointed Ken Starr. And he was obviously given the orders, be as political on this as you possibly can. And that's when we started to get those leaks like, they're going to be burned at the stake
Yeah, I know. And the MENA airport, and Clinton has a black baby in a trailer court in Arkansas somewhere.
I'm talking about the MENA airport today.
You're kidding.
I said, oh, please, I don't want to ever hear from you again. Please.
Just stop. Yeah, I know. Of course, you know, there was another part of that, and that was that the Bill Clinton's war room had already dredged up all the dirt about George H.W. Bush's little chippy.
Yeah.
That he took to China with him when he was ambassador, and you know, it was and Babs got so incensed that he had her removed. I mean, she had her removed. How can you tell? I mean, take a look at Babs. I've never seen a better likeness of her than what I see every time I pull out a $1 bill. They just, you know, they pull out they crop the image enough that you don't see the pearls. That's all.
Yeah, I guess so.
Barbara Bush, love child of the Quaker Oats man. But
well,
but he had all that.
Go ahead.
No, the Clintons had all that evidence, and they quietly informed George H.W. Bush that if, you know, you press this, and Georgie, you're going to have some splaining to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can't have that because they're upper crust, and you know, they're above that, and we don't air
well,
our.
Some of that did get out.
Oh yes, it did.
And George W., as a matter of fact, was the enforcer for his dad's campaign at that point, and he just really lit into the media on that one. Like, how dare they? You know.
And, you know, I wonder if that was the early lesson that the media got about not crossing W. I mean, I wonder if that sort of was retained in the institutional memory.
Well, that was kind of part of it. But they also, they got to be, the people who ended up in the White House press corps after Bush managed to shove his way into the White House the first time was... They loved the guy. You know, he was just Mr. Frat Boy. He would go back to the press part of the plane, and he would give, you know, he'd serve the drinks, and he'd back slap them and gave them funny names and all this kind of stuff. I remember reading an article.
Yeah, the press got the funny names. We got the funny war.
we got the funny shaft. But, just afterwards, you know, somebody wrote a stupid editorial saying, oh, isn't this great? All of the people that are going to be on the press corps are people who know Bush already and already have access and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I said, wait, I said, these people should be fired. They shouldn't be the ones to cover the president if they've gotten to be good friends with him. No, we need adversaries. We don't need friends. Well, and you see what happened. Why don't they listen to me?
It would all be so much easier if they would, wouldn't it?
The whole world would be better.
Carolyn Kay, maximum dictator for life.
Well, I don't know about that, but if they just listen.
No, okay. How about this? Carolyn Kay, universal press ombudsman.
There you go. I like that one.
Because this is... Some of this is no-brainer stuff. I mean, just so you can get an idea, the passport gate thing breaks last night, and I go to the MSNBC website looking for it. It's not even the lead story.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the lead story was, Carol?
No, what?
Traffic cameras. Are they too accurate for our own good?
Actually, they're kind of inaccurate in some places, and apparently that's on purpose because it's used as a revenue raiser.
Well, and there was another story out there that where a whole bunch of cops had been busted, and they're refusing to pay the tickets.
Well, what are they going to do? It's sort of like, there are things that we disagree with in our building, in our condo building, and they have these silly pet rules, like your dog is only supposed to be so big, but we moved in before they placed that rule, and you know, this, that, and the other. And we were thinking, you know, if our dog dies and we want to get another big dog, you know, they can say fine us, and we can say up yours.
Yeah, because yeah.
What are they going to do?
Throw you out? Yeah.
know, they could sue us, I guess, but that would cost more money than if we just didn't pay the fine. Know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Oh God. But it's so funny. It's so funny to watch the press with all of this kind of stuff, because every minute that they spend on, you know, traffic cameras and things like that is another minute that they haven't spent on the fact, and this is a theme I've been working this week, if John McCain becomes president of the United States, we will look back at the genius of George W. Bush. I'm convinced. The man's the man's a moron.
I know. Not only that, he's a deluded moron. I have a friend here in Chicago who met McCain one time and was in a situation where he had to spend about 15 minutes with the guy. And he told McCain about this movie that he had seen, and McCain said, "Oh, that sounds really great. I may go ahead and do that." Like, he liked the plot of the movie, so it was like he was going to carry that forward into the political arena, like he thought it was real or something, you know?
Yeah, like he watches Die Hard and he's going to come out and start using yippee-i-yo-ki-yay in his speeches.
And that's the way we're supposed to defend America or something, you know.
But, I mean, do we not have the right, Caro, to demand a you know, you and I talked about a presidential IQ test a couple of weeks ago. Do we not have the right at a very base level to demand just a de minimis competence? I mean, when you are the presumptive nominee, all over but the shouting of the Republican Party, and you stand there and you say that Iran is training Sunni insurgents, and Joe Lieberman has to lean over and whisper in your ear,
Shiite. That would be Shiite.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I mean, shouldn't, I mean, isn't it?
George Bush was no better.
No, that's the thing.
The names of presidents of countries and.
Oh, I remember when he said the name of the leader of Pakistan was General.
And he said that he ranted and raved because somebody might think Social Security was a federal program.
I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to August. We have real plans to be out there covering the convention.
Great!
And Guy James is working on the credentials. We're pulling together the travel plans, and I want to be there.
Yeah.
Because I want to get to the point where we've got a nominee, and everybody puts all the hatred and animosity aside. And starts going after McCain. Now I'm proud to be out there going after McCain right now while everybody else is, you know, in the cult of personality battles and all of that stuff.
That's a good position to be in.
Because he followed up. I'm sure you caught this. I mentioned this at the top of the program yesterday. He followed up his comments where he proved he didn't know the difference between a Shia and a Sunni, i.e., he was so oblivious that he didn't understand a 1,400-year-old rift. I mean, that's like saying you don't know the difference between Protestants and Catholics, okay? To a certain extent.
Well, he may not know the difference.
Then there's that. But then he follows up and explains that the present Jewish holiday of Purim is the Jewish Halloween. I'm not kidding.
Well,
I mean,
here's what the more knowledgeable people in the Republican Party seem to realize. You get yourself a dope as president, and then you can lead him. You know, you use whatever levers that you have on their vanity and their, you know, Freudian complexes and whatever it may be, and you play them. You know, you play them to do whatever conquering of or attempting to conquer of world territories that you, whatever you want. You know, the world is your oyster.
And oh,
that's certainly what they did with George Bush.
And your oysterman is a moron.
That's right, but it doesn't matter. All he has to do is be the cheerleader.
But that doesn't work out very well, because remember when
it hasn't.
No, yeah, but remember
and me, Bob. Okay?
Well, that's
but
true.
It worked out very, very well for the oil companies and the military contractors,
and not so shabby for the CEO of Bear Stearns either.
Absolutely.
While we're at it,
absolutely.
I love this, the free market bit. Can we put pay to the free market, Caro? With Bear Stearns, can we just be done with that discussion,
well,
debate?
There is no such thing as a free market today. You know, I mean, it's certainly not in our stock markets and not in any market that I can think of. There are none that are truly free, because to be truly free, there has to be complete transparency. All the players have to be just about equal. There are all sorts of requirements to make a market truly free, okay? And I guess the only ones you could really count are the kind of fake markets that they have for guessing who's going to be the political winner or the winner of the NBA championships, you know, things like that. These little games that they have on the internet and stuff. Those may be truly free markets. I don't know.
The off-track betting parlor in Midtown, Saratoga or whatever. That's more of a free market than anything that's going on Wall Street.
Certainly than anything on Wall Street. You're right. Absolutely right.
But this idea, I mean, did you catch Dana Perineal's comments about the free market the other day?
No, I mean, this is the woman who doesn't know what the Bay of Pigs was. So.
Well, and not only that, this week she also led on, Caro, that she is absolutely baffled by military terminology because she wasn't born with a penis.
Oh, whoa.
No, I'm not kidding. She said that guys understand military.
No, she wasn't born with a penis.
Well, there's that.
Have we checked?
Oh, no, don't take me there. She explained that boys understand military terminology because they get it by osmosis.
Oh, I see.
And she said,
so that's how people like Laura Rosen and you might say Valerie Plame and other
transsexuals
and other military experts.
Transsexuals.
They don't get it by osmosis. They just get it by hard work, I guess.
I mean, does that mean that, if guys are getting it under osmosis, I mean, I must have missed something. There must be a lot of guys out there whose mommies and daddies are putting little Trident missiles under their pillows at night or something.
Well, I don't know. But I remember growing up that we all played cowboys and Indians, and we all, you know, pretended to be the sheriff and shoot at each other and stuff, you know.
You lived in an egalitarian neighborhood.
Yeah, well, sort of, I guess.
But no, she said, I don't know the difference between destroyers and aircraft carriers.
Oh, Lord.
And then, so she goes on.
I'm sure I'm glad she's the person explaining, you know, all of that to the media.
But it goes back to my competency thesis. Every time somebody new comes in, we realize how good we had it with the previous one. She's making Tony Snow look brilliant.
The theory.
Tony Snow made Scott McClellan look honest. Scott McClellan made Ari Fleischer look transparent.
Oh, what a strange world we live in.
Oh, we do. And so Dana Perineal was asked. Whether the American people had a right to be a little pissed off about the Bear Stearns thing, and where's the American people's bailout? And she said, well, they're going to get their economic stimulus in mid-May, a check of $600 to offset the lost value in their homes.
Well, yeah, that 30% value that their homes have gone down is going to be paid for at $600.
Yeah, you ever see the old sitcoms and the great old comedies where something insane happens and the guy walking by on the street just reaches into the breast pocket of his coat and pulls out the pint liquor bottle and just throws it away? I mean, when she said that, I guess they must have turned the mics off in the White House press room, because there would have been breaking glass all over the room to offset the lost value in their homes.
What I think of is who was the Bridges' father, the father of all the Bridges boys,
yeah.
Actors.
Yeah, Lloyd.
Which one was the father?
Lloyd.
Lloyd Bridges, yeah. Remember in Airplane? This is a terrible day to quit smoking. This is a terrible day to quit drinking. Oh, this is a terrible day.
This is a terrible day to quit huffing glue.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, well... I mean, that's almost how you feel. It's like...
Yeah, well, But Caro, is it an issue? Tell me, is it one, the other, or a combination? Do these people in the Bush administration, do they just not give a rat's ass about what's left of the middle class? Or are they so stupid that they really think that we're going to turn America around on a $600 check?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think it's like wishful thinking. You know, if remember one of the first inklings we had of what was really going on in the Bush administration was when DiIulio quit and said that there are a bunch of Mayberry Machiavellis there. Nobody's in charge of policy. Nobody's really, you know, trying to get anything done, anything accomplished. And then later on, we had the staffer who was quoted, and I can't think of the author now, but he was quoted as saying that they make their own reality, and that, you know, while we of the reality-based community are out there trying to figure out what they're doing, they're on to creating the next reality.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
This is all kind of part of the Leo Strauss philosophy, which is that there are these super elites that have to go around creating myths and manipulating the populace into believing the myths and following the myths and all of that, and you know, and appealing to their patriotism. And so what's really amazing about all that, it sounds very Hitlerish.
Oh, speaking of Hitlerish. And you know, I we're not engaged in a debate or anything, so I don't think Godwin's law applies here.
You don't think what?
I don't think Godwin's law applies. You know, the one that says as an argument progresses, the likelihood of a mention of Nazis or Hitler approaches one.
No, but we're not arguing.
Exactly. So
we're elucidating. We're enlightening.
Right. So no, speaking.
Leo Strauss, who taught social sciences actually at the University of Chicago in the 40s and 50s. He's the one that came up with this philosophy that spawned all the neocons. And the amazing thing about it is that it really does sound a lot like, you know, Hitler and his Germany overall and the supremacy of the white races and the, you know, the myth of the German superiority.
The master race. And
yeah. So here's this guy is preaching very, very similar things. He was a Jew who had escaped Germany, and here he was safe in the United States and preaching a similar philosophy for here. And he taught Paul Wolfowitz, and he taught, Bill Kristol, some of those guys who, in the case of Bill Kristol, for example, his father Irving had been a communist at one time.
Yeah.
And then they saw that they weren't going to get anywhere that way, so they decided to switch to the right in order to get. And then, of course, they ended up taking over the Republican Party, so it was a pretty successful move there. But this whole philosophy imbues that, you know, we're superior people. We, the elite, you know, we are superior, and therefore whatever we decide for the masses, that's really best for them. You know, sort of like Barbara Bush saying to the people in the
Astros, this is working out rather nicely, you know, for them, yes.
You know, this is really good for them. I mean, considering those awful places where they used to live, this is really nice for them.
Oh God! Well, I was gonna just sort of throw something your way, based on, and it wasn't just Leo. Is the motto of the, by the way, is the motto of the University of Chicago, Jesus, we're some mean bastards? Because all of the most hateful, mean-spirited crap in the American thought process seems to flow out of that institution.
Well, a lot of it does, yeah. And it was, you know, certainly Milton Friedman was a big guy.
Milton Friedman and, Posner? Posner,
yeah.
Just, you know, insane?
Yeah. Well, I sent him a really pointed email. Because, you know, with a lot of university professors, you can get their emails on the university website, you know. So after he wrote his book about the Bush v. Gore decision in 2000, and in which he said, get this, he said that even though it was a wrong decision for the Supreme Court to step in and decide, you know, to stop the counting basically in Florida, it was a kind of rough justice because in his estimation, the Florida Supreme Court had made an incorrect decision on allowing the count to go forward. Okay. So I wrote in this email and I said, irrespective of whether the Florida Supreme Court was correct or not, I think they were. What you have advocated here, sir, is lawlessness. That, you know, if somebody thinks that, that one court has made a wrong decision, the next court can go make a wrong decision too to fix that other wrong decision. That's not law.
That's mob
not
rule.
The law?
No, not in the least.
And here's he, a federal judge, a professor at the University of Chicago. I was astounded. I was just astounded.
And that, but, you know, that's why I ask about the motto. You know.
Well, and guess who else comes? You know, was at University of Chicago. Barack Obama.
Was he there long enough for the mean crap to rub off on him?
I don't know, but he
Milton. Yeah, Milton Friedman was in retirement, right? So you know,
one
maybe
of
this
his economic advisors is a right winger from the, you know, Milton Friedman School.
Did they really name it the Milton Friedman School?
No, they
okay,
didn't.
Okay. Just to, I was going to have to put my head through a window if they had.
When he died, you know, some people were saying, you know, this and that, and he had this kind of influence, that kind of influence. The comment I made was, Milton Friedman is responsible for more misery in the human race than any other human being.
Milton Friedman wrote the blueprint for the Republican attack on organized labor.
It's not just the Republican, worldwide. Worldwide, the man caused hunger, hopelessness, degradation, rule by the rich. So,
oh, and for that, the Republican Party will build him a solid gold mausoleum or something like the tomb of Cyrus the Great or something.
Or maybe they'll bury him in the Bush Library.
Oh, it's you make it tough to get through an hour sometimes, Carol. But no, you mentioned Nazis and so forth, and I had to throw this out to you because I don't get to watch a lot of television. This is something, and I don't know if you've seen it, but have you, the Air Force has a new slogan. I'm not kidding. This is not a joke. The Air Force has a new slogan, Above All.
I know. I read that.
We do know how that translates from the German, don't we?
Yes.
Über alles.
Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles.
You do that entirely too well.
Germany above all. Yeah.
Are they?
You think they think? Well, I got to tell you, you know, there's a rival network to you called Air America.
Yes.
When they named it that, I went, whoa, slap me upside the head.
Yeah, did you guys not catch the bad movie with the Downey? And yeah, I wondered about that myself.
I mean, I remember Air America. I met a pilot for Air America. I told you I was in Vietnam for a year and a half, right?
Yeah, yes, yes.
And I met, you know, some Air America pilots, and they were all U.S. USAID. Which I don't know what its equivalent is today, but they, you know, it was all covert stuff, and you know, they were, I guess, the equivalent of CIA covert people and this and that, and they're doing shady things. And I thought, well, it would seem to me that you wouldn't want to name a progressive network after that, but they did. So
yeah. And the question presents itself: is that an accident, or is this stuff, you know? Do they that's a cool reference. Okay, we'll do that. You know, Uber alles, Air America. Is there nobody there with 10 cents worth of history?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, I tell you, you know that I was looking at your digest earlier today. And there's some just fun stuff going on in there. I saw a particular link. It was actually further down in the list that just jumped all over me. Lindy England blames media for photos.
Well, you got to blame somebody, right?
Yeah, because
it's not your fault that you humiliated Iraqi prisoners in Abu Ghraib. It couldn't possibly be your fault, right?
I mean, it wasn't you with the cigarette hanging off your lip like some kind of... No.
And the worst kind of humiliation, because it was a woman humiliating them. So it was, to them, to their culture, that is the absolute worst thing that can happen to you. But that's the media's fault. Because... See, here's the thing in America. It's not so terrible to do bad things. What's terrible is getting caught doing bad things. So the person who caught you or who announced that you were doing bad things, you got to go after them, see, because they did it for political reasons, or you question the timing of when they did it. Or you question their background. You know, what does that person have in their background? But it's never, geez, I just did the damn wrong thing.
Yeah, boy, am I stupid.
Unless your name is Elliot Spitzer, I think you did a pretty good job on that.
You know, it was dumb. But the more I look at that, Caro, the more it stinks. It really does. Mark Levine is a sharp, sharp cookie, and he and I were talking about it. And you can't help wondering, you know, even if they try him on criminal charges, he'll never be able to find out how it was that the dime got dropped on him. And I will bet you, Carolyn Kay, I'll bet you a Vienna beef hot dog, because I love them, that the product of, remember the national security letters?
Yes.
And, yeah. You know, those national security letters come with a little paragraph that says, oh, by the way, you've just received a national security letter, and if you reveal that you've received a national security letter, or tell the guy that we want the info on that there's been a national security letter, we're going to put your ass in jail.
Yes.
And no judge can review them. It is not subject to a warrant process. And it's rife with opportunities for dirty tricks. And what, in the last week or so, the FBI has admitted that even after we caught them misusing the national security letters last time, and they said they'd never do it again, that they went on doing it.
Yeah. Well, I predict that we will find out that the way they got at Spitzer was illegal, and that therefore they will not be able to use any evidence they may have garnered against him as far as breaking the Mann Act or whatever is illegal about paying for sex or whatever. So he will never be convicted of anything, but in the meantime he's totally destroyed. Okay, but that was always their objective to begin with.
Precisely.
Although they may pursue him legally to the grave, that wasn't their main objective. Their main objective was to destroy him. And for a couple of reasons. One is that he was so hard on Wall Street and Wall Street firms breaking the law. You know, how dare he tell us not to break the law?
And isn't it funny that the Bear Stearns welfare bailout only happens once Spitzer is conveniently out of the way? I mean, I don't want to get anybody's paranoid hackles up or anything, but I couldn't help noticing that.
It's hard not to connect those dots with this administration, because we've seen so many places where the dots were connected.
Do we have a new verb? Was Elliot Spitzer Siegelmund?
Siegelmund or, Siegelmund would be a good one.
Speaking, yeah. And did you catch that one follow-up, Caro? The Siegelmund story gets sadder and more tragic and more hateful and more ugly with every passing day. I saw the other day where an individual who is a close acquaintance of his has now written that the man has been beaten in prison.
Oh, my God.
I kid you not.
Oh, my God.
They won't... listen, I mean, this is... I mean, when I'm playing and being over the top, people know that I'm playing and being over the top. And so I don't want anybody to make the mistake that I'm doing that now. This is not a joke. Don Siegelman is not allowed so much as a piece of stationery in prison. He wrote a letter to this friend of his, and he had to write it on a piece of Xerox paper on which he had copied a newspaper article.
Because they won't let him have paper to write a letter.
Right.
Somehow, somebody found out that the only way he was able to watch the 60 Minutes segment about his situation was by bribing the other prisoners. They wanted to watch the basketball game or something. And it's a vote. So he had to bribe them all with something.
Well, he is an Alabama politician.
I don't know. He gave them extra cigarettes or steak, or I don't know what it was. But
I don't want to think about what the terms of the agreement were.
Oh, good Lord! I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Next. But no, I mean that's really unfair on my part. The deadly serious part of this is the man is being physically abused inside the federal penitentiary.
It is just.
And this is a man whose appeal is not even complete.
I know.
Who should not be behind bars.
He should never have been given a prison sentence to begin with.
He should.
What he was convicted for is something every politician does.
Patronage.
And, you know, okay, throw them all in prison. Hey, I'm for that. Let's throw them all in prison.
Just tighten them up a little bit.
Talk about your overcrowded prison.
But when I say I don't want to be seen as being over the top, but the Don Siegelman case is Soviet. This is the kind of stuff that when we sat in our high school classes and our blue-haired government and history teachers told us about, you know, why we're proud to be Americans. You know, this is the kind
of
stuff that was held up to us as the sort of evil, nasty, vile, disgusting filth that went on in the Soviet Union.
The Soviet Union, right. It only happened there, right.
I mean, these are tales from the gulag.
Yes.
And I don't know how we get relief for Don Siegelman. With the two Democratic nominees that we have, there are questions I would like to ask that are questions they would dread to have to answer. But one of them is, you know, will you free Don Siegelman?
I would not want to ask them that question before the election.
No, because it would be fodder for the other side.
Immediately after being sworn in, pardon that guy, and start an investigation into how it happened, who was responsible, put those people in jail. Just as, didn't they put the Duke prosecutor in jail?
Or is the
trial still going on?
I'm not sure.
I know they tried
him. Regardless of, let's assume a Democratic president for a moment, Caro. How much time do you think should be spent, how much energy should be spent looking backward at all the abuses of the Bush administration?
Oh, I think definitely a lot should be spent on that, because these people have got to be made accountable somehow. In fact, somebody talked to Conyers at the Take Back America conference and asked him about that and said, you know, are we just going to let these people get off scot-free? And he said that he promised he would go, you know, he would continue with the investigations even more freely with a Democratic president next year.
Because, you know, like with this passport gate, I'm not kidding. The Attorney General has already said that he will not investigate. Now, this man put his hand in the air and swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States.
Well,
he has violated his oath.
By Bush, what more can I say?
I know, and there's going to be so much work to be done in terms of cleaning up 8 years of the Bush administration's mess. I hope that they don't just let this stuff go by the boards.
to me, part of cleaning up the mess, and this is one of the reasons why I'm supporting Hillary Clinton, is I think she's the person to roll up her sleeves and get in there and dig in that mess and, you know, clean sweep like a good housewife, you know, get rid of all the cobwebs. But part of it has to be uncovering the wrongdoing, the true wrongdoing, the breaking of laws. We have to know that so that we can know how to avoid it in the future. You may remember that Bill Clinton, when he became president, stopped the Iran-Contra investigation. And I'm sure he thought at the time, well, you know, they'll be nice to me now. Well, you saw how nice they were to him.
And I hope they've climbed the learning curve on that.
Well, I hope so too. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do to force it to happen. But by all rights.
But there's a taxpayer. There really is a list, Caro. What about habeas corpus? What about national security letters? What about Guantanamo Bay? What about telecom immunity?
What about signing statements?
What about domestic spying in general? You know, yes. do you think from either of the two that we can expect a rollback? Or are they going to, once they're invested with the majesty of the presidency, going, well, I want me them powers too?
Well, I don't know.
I don't like them now.
I don't know that either one of them has addressed that specific issue, but it's what I kept trying to tell the right wingers all along. I used to correspond with a group of right wingers, and they were all for all this stuff, the unitary president of this and that. It's like, don't you understand that whatever power you give George Bush because you like him or you think it's great for him to have this power, when a Democrat becomes president, that Democrat is going to have that same power. What I used to say is Hillary Clinton.
That's the same argument I've used.
Hillary Clinton becomes president, she's going to have all those powers, you know, and that,
how you
oh,
going?
That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. There's never going to be another Democratic president. Never, 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 because we're doing so great and we're doing so wonderful.
How are you going to like having you a unitary Hillary? But I've tried that a couple of times, and they do blanch.
But here's the thing that continues to get me is that the right wing does not care at all about consistency, and so therefore they will hand George Bush whatever he wants and give it to him and give it to him. As soon as the Democratic president comes along, the yelling, the screaming, the squealing, the horrible, the walking out of the Congress and the this and the that that's going to go, the drama, you know, the fainting, the pearl clutching that's going to go on.
Pearl clutching. I love pearl clutching.
Anything, over any little thing, it's going to be. That's why people who said, I don't want another, you know, 8 years of drama the way we had with the Clintons. Did they think they're not going to get that if Obama became president?
You're going to get 8 years of squealing, no matter who the Democrat is that's in office,
exactly.
Because that's what these dirty bastards do.
Republicans. That is what they do. Yeah.
Now let me shift gears one more time, if I may, in the time we have remaining. A couple of other media stories out there that have particular interest for me as someone who is vitally involved in running an internet radio network. One, the sale of Clear Channel's not working out so well, is it?
Yeah, the potential buyers are not happy with each other right now. I don't know the real extent of it, because I just saw the headline and posted it this morning. I didn't really look into it, but that's kind of interesting because one of the, capital providers is, Bain Capital. Out of Massachusetts.
Where have I heard that name before?
Because that was a Mitt Romney thing. He was, I think he started it, actually. He went from another.
Yeah, he lucked out and bought Staples stock instead of Boston Market. If he'd bought the Boston Market, he'd just be another good-looking guy with a $400 haircut.
But instead, he bought Staples, huh?
Yeah.
So, But anyway, that, you know, Bain Capital was his baby. He's not active, or hasn't been, I don't think, active, but he still owns, has ownership in some of the funds.
And it appears that it's the private equity funds that are squirreling the deal, because
yeah.
The public, or you know, the banks involved are Citigroup, Royal Bank of Scotland Group, Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, and Morgan Stanley.
Well, but think too that,
and they say they're ready to go forward, but Bain Capital is going. I don't know if they're just, you know, pouting or what, but yeah.
Well, there is a credit crunch right now. Think about that.
Well, there is one, isn't there?
And there's also the fact that, you know, if anybody had their hats on straight instead of crooked, they'd be thinking, you know, radio stations? Do I want to buy all that brick and mortar? I mean, do I really want that, or do I want the wave of the future, which is satellite radio and internet radio?
Well, it appears that Bain Capital is being strangely silent in the whole affair, leading people to think that they're getting ready to jump ship, which makes you wonder what kind of financial shape Bain Capital is in.
Well, there you go. We now know that one of the Carlyle Group funds went belly up. And the partners, the Carlyle Group partners, some of them are thinking about maybe helping out some of the people who lost money, like the employees and stuff. They're thinking about it.
Yeah, just kind of thinking, yeah. Well, the other one that grabbed me, Carol, is the story about the wireless spectrum auction that was held by the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
$4.7 billion payout to get the C block of the wireless spectrum, which requires the winner to build a network that'll give open access to devices and applications. You know, Google was actively bidding on this.
Yes, but there was another article right underneath that one, I think, where an analyst was looking at it and said, well, you know, Google really pushed this and ended up getting some of the other communication companies to get these blocks. They didn't have to invest the billions, and yet it's being used for the purpose that they want it to be used for, which sounds pretty smart.
As long as we have an open and free internet.
Yeah, well.
I mean, net neutrality becomes more and more important with this kind of stuff. But curious in this is who did win the auction.
Verizon was one, I believe.
Yep, Verizon. Can you hear me now?
But
and I can't help
this
but
this is not the cell phone frequency we're talking about here.
No. This is like wireless internet.
It's what's been used for television broadcast.
Oh, did I read it wrong?
See, what they did was when they go to digital, a lot of the bandwidth, the analog bandwidth in air broadcasting over the air, is going to become available because the digital takes so much less of that band. Okay? So, therefore, a lot of it became available, which had been given to RCA and to NBC, you know, all these people many years ago. It was just given to them. They never had to pay for it. And so they said, okay, now what are we going to do with all of that? And so they said, we'd auction it off, which makes sense to me. Being a taxpayer, I'd love to see some of that money come back to me. And so it's going to be real interesting to see how they use that, how they work it into existing wireless capability, you know, short-range, long-range. They may not need the cell towers within the broadcast areas of, you know, that the what was formerly the TV broadcast. In other words, you'll be able to do that in a much more a much broader area. You won't have to have a cell tower every so often. You see what I mean?
Yeah. I, of course, have a personal angle on this. I just hope I can get one bar. We had a We had an incident a couple of weeks ago where everything went down here. And when we lose our internet connection, we lose our phones, we lose our streaming, we lose everything.
Yeah. And yeah, that's been one of my concerns here, for example, even in Chicago, in you know, a very reliable area for all those kinds of services. My cable company said when I got my internet service from them, which I don't have with them anymore, but when I got it, they said, oh, yeah, and you can bundle your phone, too. And I said, well, are you as reliable as a phone company? I run a business here, you know. Is this as reliable as a phone company? And, of course, they didn't want to answer that, but I knew that they were not.
Well, we get a humongous bargain on all of this, but when it does go down, we lose everything. And the last time that happened, I kid you not, Caro, it was one of those, you know, if only there was a picture sort of things, because I had to go out into my backyard to the highest point of the yard and stand on top of a wheelbarrow to get one bar.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, I
had to call and find out when you were going to get your service back?
Yeah, so I could call my provider, and so I could call Ben Birch, and so I could call Peter Godbold and tell him, you know, that the balloon had gone up and everything here was dead for a little bit.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have, though, because this really is the future. The wireless access and making it available in bizarre areas like the, you know, maybe you don't have to run hard wires if you've got wireless internet access in rural areas. It would be nice.
Or satellite. A lot of parts of the developed world, for example, undeveloped parts of the world, they're skipping generations. They're not building huge infrastructures of, you know, communication grids and things like that. They're just going straight to satellite phones. And one person in the village has one, the other people, you know, pay a little something to use it. And then now they're going to PCs with, you know, satellite communication to get to the internet. And I mean, you know, it's just amazing what's happening and is going to keep happening. This whole world of communication is going to keep changing and changing and changing for a good long while yet.
Well, I'm looking.
It's hard to keep on top of.
Yeah, and if we can just keep a neutral internet alive.
Yeah, well, all of that, the reliability will grow, you know, as it becomes more important, as more businesses get to the point where they too are. But then again, you know, you run into the possibility of sabotage too, like the four cables that were accidentally cut in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, isn't it funny how that one just sort of slid off the radar?
Yeah, it just disappeared.
I mean, we just blacked out.
You never heard any more about it.
Yeah, we blacked out Iran and everybody who could report on the fact of bombs falling and stuff like that. You know.
Yeah, right.
It just went. It's just, you know, what, huh? Something got cut? What? Yeah, I know.
So a lot of those things are going to have to be taken into consideration in as things develop, that, you know, we have to think about the possibility of sabotage, we have to think about weather, we have to think about all the possible ways that that systems can be brought down, and plan for that, prepare for that. And, you know, as the need grows, those things will happen. I mean, just as, you know, when was the last time you had a regular phone service outage?
Around here, they were fairly frequent.
Really?
Yeah. Verizon is not your friend.
Well, the places where I've lived, I haven't lived out in the country like you, so the places where I've lived, it's been 30 years or more since there was any kind of outage, whatever. So. So that kind of reliability will end up in the new communication world, too. I just don't know. I do know that it's all going to converge so that we have telephone, internet, entertainment via computer, television, whatever. All of that's going to be over the same network.
Because I am in a rural position, and many of my friends are and neighbors around here, of course, are as well, I'd like to see the Democrats get serious about something on the same order as the old Rural Electrification Act.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. In fact, there is an initiative like that, isn't there?
I've seen a little bit of it, but it certainly isn't something that's, and maybe that's because we are a more urban than rural population now, but it certainly hasn't grabbed the imagination of anybody, you know, to make any noise about it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the kind of stuff that we have to wait till the Democrat gets in office, because these people are running for office and they've got to know that they are going to have an absolute boatload of stuff on their plate. You know, it's like nobody goes to bed for the first 100 days. Got work to do. I don't know why anybody'd want the job myself.
Well,
but
for the last
100
days of the Bush administration, I can assure you nobody's going to sleep either, because they're going to be so busy shredding documents.
Well, yeah, and what do you think Bear Stearns is? I've been arguing, because I kind of come from a country perspective, anybody who has ever seen a hog trying to get his feet into the trough understands these waning days of the Bush administration.
Or...
They know that their time of getting the gravy is coming to an end, because I think even the right wingers sense that, you know, McCain's just not the guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so they'll be busy, busy, busy grabbing and grabbing, grabbing all that they can, but they'll also be busy, busy, busy covering their tracks as best they can.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's going to be smoke coming out of the shredders. It's going to be another one of those cases where they.
Every government building.
Well, do you remember, Caro, when somebody caught the industrial shredder van driving up to Dick Cheney's residence at the Naval Observatory?
Yes, Wildcat had that.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a C.W. McCall. Yeah, hey, good buddy, we got us a shredding convoy.
Well, it'll have to be a contractor, you know.
Well, of course.
KBR. I bet
yeah,
they have shredding contracts. So.
Hey, who's to say Blackwater can't shred, too?
Blackwater can do it, too?
Because, you know, we do...
They might even have to have a bid.
Now that they can't do. They don't do bids. They don't do bids. Hey, Caro, I hope you have a great Easter weekend, and this has been a fun conversation. And, you know, I got a feeling next week will be every bit as interesting as this one was.
I think so. I think around here we're going to have to search for the eggs in snow.
Oh, we had that last year, and we had snow on Easter last year, and it was way up in April, and all I did was swear all Easter day. I think it has a lot to do with some of the things that have gone wrong in the last year.
Oh, well, you have a great weekend, too.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. And so I'm going to take a quick break. We'll come back with the second hour. You got something on your mind? It's Friday. 2 days of enforced silence. It's bad for you, I tell you. 877-443-2366 is the phone number. 304-658-5453 or 304-658-3333. I was doing so good, too. If you've got your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan, we'd appreciate it if you saved us a nickel or two. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'll also update you on where the monthly stands tonight as well. Just somebody remind me, okay? This is The Horn, and we'll be right back.
Tuesday on this island, not much going on. The parties are all over. The end had just passed on. The jumbo drums are beating with the tales from late last night. The story's very heating for everyone's delight. You can hear them on the Coconut Telegraph. Can't you see nothing under their hat? You can hear them on the Coconut Telegraph saying, who did this and that, this and that, this and that. Now I'm not one to deal in gossip, but was he that big a fool to do a belly buster high dive and miss the entire pool? And what became of sweet Melissa and the boy nobody knew? Did Ricardo ever find her? I swear it's just between me and you. But you can hear it on the Coconut Telegraph by now. Everybody knows. You can hear it on the Coconut. I guess everything's been said. But when the eagle flies on Friday and the bars break out the rum, then the judge begins to jump in, and you'll hear those hot lines hum. I put it on the coconut telegraph, all the celebration and the stress. Baby, put it on the coconut telegraph.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, then. A couple of things just to get the hour started. An email rolls in from our pal Cindy with regard to the query as to how much energy we expend pursuing the crimes of the present administration once we get a new one in. And I got to tell you, I agree with this assessment. Cindy says, how much time and effort should be expended to jail these guys? All caps. Whatever it takes. The historic lesson of the last 50 years is that we have got to make them pay. No justice, no peace. They have swept criminal corruption under the carpet since November of 1963. We can't have our country back until we restore the Constitution, whatever it takes. D says, I, like you, do not watch much network news other than The Daily Show and Olbermann. I did see that this was going to be on Nightline last night. I've always been talking about what I'm calling Passport Gate. I've always thought that a lot of what makes us a sicker nation has to do with the environment that we live in, mainly the pesticides, herbicides, and chemicals we come in contact with daily. I know with everything that is going on in politics the last few days, I like to take a break, and this really got me thinking. Okay, I was wrong. It wasn't about that. It wasn't about Passport Gate. A link says, it's about a clinic for the chemically sensitive. And I'm a little bit familiar with that issue because somebody that I started in radio with way, way, way back in the dim and dark mists of time is chemically sensitive and was run out of a very lucrative career in the radio business by exposure to really noxious perfumes and got a significant judgment out of it. A couple of other things for you. I wanted to share something with you from our friend Eugene Finnerman, the sharpest satirist on the internet. He wanted to chime in on John McCain-Churian candidate John McSames' comments about Purim. Eugene Finnerman is Jewish, of course, as he has noted on his appearances on this program. And he says, the thing is titled, and it's, of course, over at Your RDA of Irony at FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. Click on Your RDA of Irony, and you will be darn glad for having done so. Sign up for him. Post entitled, Senator McCohen, Jesus, Eugene. John McCain, presidential candidate and aspiring rabbi, explained to Israel that Purim was the Jewish Halloween. Yes, each year my tribe's children dress up as witches, trolls, or supermen, or their Jewish equivalent, Joan Rivers, William Crystal, and Superman. This year, a number of the adorable little tykes went as Ben Bernanke collecting money for Bear Stearns. Now I am eager to hear Rabbi McCain's further explanation of Jewish holidays. I imagine the following. Hanukkah is the Jewish Christmas, in which we celebrate the birth of our many Jewish messiahs, Moses, Albert Einstein, Sigmund Freud, Lenny Bruce, and Bob Dylan. Passover is the Jewish Easter, commemorating the Jewish rebirth from slave labor to white-collar jobs. The holiday recounts how the ancient Jews spent 40 years wandering around New York until they found their way to Florida. Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish World Series, in which everyone competes at the temple to flaunt who had the best year. Bear Stearns Brokers will be out of the running for a while. And Yom Kippur is the Jewish Lent, where we atone for God's continued incompetence and his implausible excuses for failing to live up to our expectations. However, in accordance with the highest standards of Jewish parents, we blame ourselves rather than that celestial brat. If only there were a Stanley Kaplan for deities. Eugene, my brother, you are in the wrong business. You ought to be... You know, if there was a really, really intelligent late-night television program, Eugene would be head writer. Really, not kidding. Go on over to FinnermanWorks.com and sign up for your RDA of irony. You will be glad you did, and you won't have to wait for me to read the darn things. And a little piece of information passed along. If you were listening last night, you heard the conversation that I had with J.W. Randolph from Appalachian Voices, appvoices.org. And I just got a PM from JW, or Dub, as they call him, or well, at least some there call him that, because I saw it in an email earlier today. Hey, time out, I got a sneeze coming. Oh, it's spring.
I'll be sounding like this really, really soon. I won't be able to say the letter Ed. You know, the one that comes after Eb. Which comes after Ed. It's going to be kind of rough.
Ah, sorry. No, JW says, did you hear that Larry Gibson got to ask Barack Obama a question about mountaintop removal? I told him I hadn't. And he said, Larry apparently said that Obama had... Oh, God, I love you, Larry Gibson. This is beautiful. He told Obama that he had great points on the war, but there's a war in Appalachia. Straight out, he told Obama that 470 mountains have been destroyed, and they're dumping their waste in our water. And he told Obama he needed to oppose mountaintop removal outright and support the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 2169. Obama's response was that he would strengthen the Clean Water Act and that he knew the Bush administration had weakened it, and that his staff would look at H.R. 2169. Now, bear in mind, that's not exactly coming out and saying, I agree with you, brother, we need to stop mountaintop removal, which is the right answer. It's the right answer morally. It's the right answer scientifically. It's the right answer ethically. It's the wrong answer on a cold evening in Beckley, West Virginia, okay? Because he would have been pilloried for it. He also gave, Obama did, another response on mountaintop removal. He said, and this is a quote, my job as president and one of the keys of the federal government is to listen to and work with local and state officials who are knowledgeable about these issues, whether it's a governor or the mayor or senators, so that we can make this work properly. One thing I can promise you I won't do, though, is I'm not just going to take a bunch of contributions from the coal industry and then just do their bidding any more than I would just listen to the environmentalists. I want to listen to everybody, get everybody's point of view, and then make the best decision for the people of West Virginia. I'm told also that he has been, and his staff has been, considerably more responsive to pro-mountain groups than the other sides have. Well, it's not the answer I'd like to have, but, you know, I spent a lot of years wanting a Batman utility belt, too, and I never got one of those. You see, the default answer for the last 8 years has been, you ignorant hillbillies, shut the hell up, we got money to make here. And I sincerely hope, as I noted before, I sincerely hope that Senator Obama understands, and I apply this to Hillary Clinton, too, that they both understand that Don Blankenswine and the rest of the coal mafia are not going to support either one of them in any way, shape, form, or fashion. They are going to support John McSame. They're going to support the guy who has promised to just be a little bit pudgier, a little bit balder, a little bit dumber, a little bit loonier version of George W. Bush. So cozying up to the coal thugs is not in either of their interests, because those are not the people who are going to run, walk, or crawl to the voting booth to put them in office. They have a chance. Either one of them, as the nominee, has the chance to initiate a dialogue about an Appalachia that is valued as an actual member of the United States of America. And God, I hope they do. This was the thrust of some of a blog post by our dear, dear friend Jeff Biggers over at Huffington Post in the last day or so. If you do what I'm doing and you go to Huffington Post and you search for Jeff Biggers, you will find this latest post, and I think you'll be very, very glad that you took the time. Now, let me see if I can get to it here. I'll see if it pops up real quick. Well, in the meantime, while we're waiting for that to happen, we'll go to the phones. Hi, who I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, as you know, Barack Obama was in Portland today.
Uh-huh. He does get around, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. They both do. Busy little bees. There was something interesting about his speech, or what wasn't in his speech.
To wit?
The energy portion. He mentioned wind, solar, biodiesel. He very carefully did not mention coal. There was no mention whatsoever of coal.
But coal is...
You know, whether or not that's significant, I don't know.
Well, I think it's significant in Oregon, because you don't get a great deal of your energy from coal, do you?
No, but the clean coal technology has been brought up in Oregon before.
So what, is it going to come from, like, the Powder River Basin coal out of Montana or something?
Yeah. Just, dang if I know. We get most of our energy from hydro.
Well, with something like the Columbia River there, that's to be expected, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, this, he was laying out, you know, this national, you know, energy deal. And I found it interesting that was left off. Now, I don't know if it's really significant. I just thought it was interesting in view of the fact that I know the mountaintop removal people had been after him. I know I've been after him.
Oh, I'm told, you know, your compatriot Gene is up there, too, and he's telling me now that Washington County gets its power from Montana coal.
Oh, it does? Okay. See, our local PUD doesn't. We get it strictly from hydro. It's... This is something that would be very, very interesting to keep track of to see if maybe... You know, I don't expect him to come out before the election and condemn the coal industry, because let's face it, even though we know they're not going to support him, they do have a machine to attack him with.
Please elaborate.
Well, they're going to attack him sooner or later. We just don't want to start any sooner than they absolutely have to.
Okay.
Because they're going to go after, they're going to support McCain.
Well, sure they are.
The minute he comes out against coal, they're going to start on him.
Well, I think they'll probably start on him after those remarks where he says he's not just going to listen to coal. Because, you know, that has been the default position for the last 8 years in the coal fields. And frankly, it's not just coal. It's coal, it's oil, it's gas. It's anybody who has anything to do with extractive fossil fuels. And that is who the Bush administration has listened to the exclusion of everyone else.
Yeah. But, you know, I thought it was interesting that he just left it out. He just, you know, like, oh, coal doesn't exist, you know. It was almost like it just wasn't there anymore. Sometimes it's more significant what they don't say than what they do.
Yeah, well, precisely. Silence is platinum sometimes.
Yep.
Okay.
Just a little tidbit. Oh, and he did mention specifically that he would bring back habeas corpus, civil rights, close Guantanamo, bring back the Bill of Rights. I put the YouTube up on the video of the speech on the main page so people can see it. He says, as a constitutional lawyer, he supports and stands up for the Constitution.
Well, that's a beginning.
Yep.
And again, I think we've got to be, there are things that we want as people who love the Constitution more than we love politicians that I don't think that we can expect to have from a politician. Because politicians have, and you know, you're not, if you're a Democrat running for the presidency, you are not crazy if you take into account what kind of lies and filth will be spread about you.
Oh yeah, that's given.
So, but I hate to buy a pig in a poke, and I am not suggesting that either Obama or Hillary are pigs in a poke. But some of this stuff, as much as it galls me, and I am the last guy in the world to take anything on faith, but I fear that we're going to have to take some on faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are. So it's, you know, you pay your money, you take your choice, and I can only say, whoever it is, make it in good conscience, go out, make your choice, and then we'll follow that one.
Well, see, I had someone tell me today that I couldn't base my primary vote solely on the position of the candidate vis-a-vis mountaintop removal. And while I try not to be a single issue voter, Susan, on that issue, I said, the hell I can't. Now, it might be a little bit silly for somebody else who has a closer issue to make their vote decision based primarily on that. But if I don't make electoral decisions on mountaintop removal, there won't be an I or an Agnes or any of my family here to make any decisions electorally whatsoever.
Exactly. And besides which, what is important to you is up to you.
It's sure it is, but I mean, I think an informed voter considers all the issues, because I'm the last one in the world who wants to be lumped in with that gang of mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, strychnine-drinking, tongue-speaking fundamentalists who only vote on abortion.
Yeah. But by the same token, it's like those feminists who say, I should be voting for Hillary because I'm a woman. Horse bucky!
Yeah.
It's not the reason I picked a candidate. But then I'm not put down somebody who does
Yeah, I mean, it's tough.
It's the person's choice.
It exactly is. I mean, and that is the heart and soul of our electoral system.
And whoever is nominated, I will trot down to that voting. Well, in my case, I will open up my little envelope.
You will trot down to the mailbox.
Democrat. I will put my little goodie in, and I will take it down, and I will vote for the Democrat.
And that's, I think, what has to happen.
Whether it's Hillary or whether it's Barack, I will vote for that person.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Susan, I got to roll on here.
Today.
Pardon?
Time to stop the fighting.
Yeah, right. I agree wholeheartedly.
Love to Agnes.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a wonderful holiday. Well, you know, celebrate the pagan side of the holiday weekend.
Yeah.
Go crucify a chocolate rabbit.
I plan on it.
All right. Later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to piss somebody off with that, too, one of these days. I'm going to piss everybody off one of these days. Hi. Who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Happy Easter, for sure.
Thank you. And to you as well.
Pagan sides and whatever sides people enjoy. I was reminiscing today about Easter egg hunts and jelly beans and all that good stuff when I was a kid. Although one year our family's English pug ate all my candies, so... That was kind of a heartbreaking Easter.
Oh, that's tough. And Easter's rough here in the hills too, and probably where you are as well. Probably, although I know you didn't grow up out in Denver, it's still pretty cold out there too, isn't it?
Today was about 50, breezy, and we might get some cold rain tomorrow, maybe even some snow, but warm again Sunday around 60. So,
well, that's
and often sunny.
That's doable. The little ones can put on their cardigans and go hunt their eggs. Sure.
Yeah, it'll work.
It's just kind of hard. It's hard to do it in 2 feet of snow.
Yes, indeed.
Because the Easter Bunny gets very, very cold hiding eggs.
They have a nice morning celebration at Red Rocks each year.
Oh, I bet that's gorgeous.
Yeah. Sometimes the weather does end up canceling it, but... Usually it works out pretty good. Also, I wanted to mention, actually pick up on something Susan was saying. Is it Suzanne or Susan?
Susan.
Susan. I don't know about the energy sources in Oregon. I imagine, you know, it's some coal and some hydro for sure. Hopefully they'll have some tidal power in the future. I know they're working on that. But I was thinking, you know, it's interesting. Here in this country, we have coal from other countries, like Colombia, actually, that powers our big cities.
Yes, we do, and it's mined by the Drummond Company.
There you go.
Headquartered out of Birmingham, Alabama. Part and parcel of the murder of union organizers in Colombia.
That's right. That's right. I thought you'd be familiar with that. It's something I'm just learning more about all the time. And Noam Chomsky's daughter, Aviva, is actually quite a scholar and activist in her own right. And she just released a book called The People Behind the Coal. And it's about her work with coal miners in Colombia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. She's brought several up here to speak to people about their experiences, their environmental and labor struggles, and how indigenous people have been displaced oftentimes. You know, and they don't necessarily want the mining to end because they're so desperate for work. You know, they've lost their traditional ways of life. Sometimes they didn't even need any money, you know. They were just connected in different ways.
Right, right, sure.
But, you know, they have mixed feelings about it, about whether, you know, they want the company to be just more responsible, more respectful of you know, other stakeholders in society.
Yeah, not commit murder, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, little things. You know, so much of our focus here is on shareholders. You know, that's what everyone has to be focused on and sacrifice to. It's like, you know, the stock market sometimes is like this giant volcano that we throw future generations into and ecosystems and whatever. But, yeah, broadening the discussion to other stakeholders in society, and I'm glad Obama at least is, you know, saying things along those lines.
Well, you know, Senator Clinton and Senator Obama both opined on mountaintop removal to one degree or another in the last 3 days. And I got to tell you, Obama's answer was the better of the two. Because Hillary talked about maybe finding a way to put the mountains back together again.
Oh, no. Yeah. And I think actually the best answer I've heard was Ralph Nader's. And I know people have a lot of issues with him running at all. And all.
I have issues with Ralph and Ralph's propensity for running lost cause campaigns, but I don't have any issues whatsoever with his politics or his policy stance.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, he said it's got to end.
Yeah, well, he was on Tim Russert, I think, or some show like that, and they asked him how he was going to campaign, and he said something along the lines of, you know, different things in different states, and they said in West Virginia, we'll be there with the people who are trying to stop their mountains from being blown up in this mountaintop removal mining. You know, he actually mentioned the issue, and, you know, not that we're going to repair the mountains or anything like that, but he's going to stand with the people trying to stop it. So.
And please understand, Preston, this is not, for me and most of the folks that I know involved with it, this is not a middle ground issue. This is not a compromise issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I am wary of sounding like a single issue voter. That's not my intent. But any mountaintop removal is too much mountaintop removal because there's too much at stake, Preston.
Yep.
It's the water resources, the land resources. The ability for this state to have literally any future whatsoever. Because, again, please remember, the people who benefit the most from mountaintop removal don't live anywhere near West Virginia. Now, you might have a few people working for Massey Energy that live in West Virginia, but they don't live underneath the mountains that are being destroyed, and they are not the primary beneficiaries. The primary beneficiaries are way the heck out of West Virginia. And they make, this is the part that lets you know that it really, really is a dummied up scam. You can't catch Massey Energy making a profit on any quarter. Now, this is a country that's all eat up, right, with, shareholders' rights, just as what you mentioned.
Right.
They can't make a profit. Massey Energy, I don't think Massey has turned two quarters of profits in the last 6 years.
Interesting.
And yet Don Blankenship, the CEO, his salary keeps going up.
Right. They can't make a profit, but they can always find the digits for their own bank accounts.
Well, exactly. His salary keeps going up, and in many instances, the banks that fund them keep pouring the money in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you and I were running a bicycle shop,
mm-hmm,
and we could not turn a profit and yet we still managed to keep the banknote paid, the next time we went back for another loan, do you think the bank would give it to us?
Right. There's this kind of corporate communism going on. And, you know, the discussion about the economy in this country is so misleading. You know, this kind of free market rhetoric and, you know, you got to be, you know, the invisible hand, right? And, you know, big government so bad when, you know, big government and big business are just working hand in hand, what Mussolini called fascism.
Yeah.
you know, subsidizing these horrid industries and, you know, trying to use the rationale of jobs, you know, and taxes, but falling short on both those scores.
But even if you, Preston, even if you've got a job on one of these affairs, how can you delude yourself into thinking that job's going to be there for you in 5 years?
Right.
Because it's not. And when the company packs up and leaves, they don't ask you to come with them. They tell you tough luck.
Yeah. And even though some of those workers, no doubt, are very happy to have a job, might even pay pretty good, it's got to make them sick in the soul on some level.
No, it doesn't. I mean, no, it doesn't.
You don't think so?
No, I know so. Okay. They have no moral compunction against doing it whatsoever. Because they are not just employees, they are a captive audience, Preston.
True.
And every day they're told that they're doing it for America.
True.
And they get little carnivals thrown for them. And just as was the case in the early days of the mining industry in West Virginia, they put up their own, you know, we got health care for you, and they put up local clinics that are owned by the company that only company employees can go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And day in and day out, it's, you know, don't you listen to them environmentalist extremists.
Yep. And probably for the upper-level people, they've got all kinds of cocktail parties going on.
Oh, Lord, it's a nice life.
Ladies of the night, you know, to service them. And, yeah, they're very addicted to the sexual favors they get with the, you know, fossil fuel mafia. But, and I think you're right in general that there is no compunction about it. That's, they're hooked on that stuff. And
well, and consider who goes to work for them too, please. And this is not me trying to be an elitist. I don't want to get called on the carpet for that, Preston.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a kid who has gone to an at best adequate public school system.
Mm-hmm.
It is more than likely that kid has gone to an inadequate, substandard school system.
A manipulative one.
Yeah.
You know, a harmful one where they're trained to be obedient.
Right.
And
odds are he doesn't graduate. Mm-hmm. He turns 16, and well, his daddy's been running a D9 Caterpillar for 30 years, mm-hmm. and he's going to learn to run one too.
Right. And then they've got the media further miseducating them, you know, and they're probably very limited as to their cable or satellite TV package, if they can even get that. But, you know, the images they're receiving is so, you know, it inculcates disrespect for the environment.
Sure.
And, you know, just get yours and, you know, don't worry about it. Yeah.
And when he gets his lunch break, he sits in his truck. And he turns on the radio, and he listens to Rush Limbaugh talking about the Enviro-Nazis.
Exactly, yep.
And when he gets a little time off, he goes to the local watering hole up the holler, and he sits down, and far be it from me to criticize a man for drinking a beer, but he sits there and pours money into the jukebox and drinks beer, and he sits around with his buddies, and they talk about people who are trying to take their jobs. Them environmentalists want our jobs, and I hate them. I wish somebody would kill them.
Yep, yep, the secular liberals and the socialists and all that stuff.
And on Sunday, if he gets Sundays off, Preston, he goes to a local church. And that local church does not affirm his salvation, but rather affirms his employment, that he's doing the right thing for Jesus by blowing up mountains.
And right here in the Bible, it says man should dominate the earth.
Hey, dominionism ain't dominionism for nothing, Preston.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. And then who was that guy, James Watt, was it, who was the energy secretary or the environmental secretary in the Reagan administration?
Yeah, James Watt.
James Watt. And he made some remark about his theology. It was like, why should we worry about the earth when, you know,
it's not going to be here in 100 years.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It's a huge problem on so many levels, political, economic, philosophical, theological, and they're entrenched.
And it's the total package too. I mean, if you were to meet one of these people or shoot a video of them or a documentary, you would find that 24/7 they are coal. They are friends of coal, brothers of coal, sisters of coal. They wear their clothing is called their stripes. And they wear their stripes when they get all gussied up and go to Walmart. It's pathetic. It is truly pathetic.
Yeah. And I guess they get
But they're making $65,000 and $70,000 a year doing it.
Yeah.
And that's the central inquiry. That's one of the central inquiries I think that we have to have going forward on this issue is replacing those jobs.
Yeah.
Because these people are motivated by that pay, and they are completely addicted to it, as is any American household. So if you come along to that kid, or that guy who was a kid, and he's making $60,000-$65,000 a year, and you say, hey, I got $80,000 that says you don't want to do that anymore. You'd rather have a green, sustainable job that's going to be your job for the rest of your career. How about it?
Yep.
You know what? That extra $15,000 a year just might turn him into another one of those Enviro-Nazis.
There you go. And, you know, I think the same, you know, the issues you've spoken to, I think it applies to people employed in the warfare state.
Sure.
You know, they're making $50,000 or $60,000 at Lockheed Martin or Raytheon or United Technologies.
GE.
Yep. And it's and soldiers. You know, they're told they're doing all this stuff for their country, and you know the people they're killing are kind of like subhuman animals and
Hodges.
All that. Yep. That's right. Ragheads. You know, non-believers, you know, they're not Christians, and they're a threat to the security of Israel, right? As Israel kills them, you know, thousands each year.
You know, I was reading the story of, a man's last name is El-Masri. He is a German born of Lebanese parents, and he's one of the people who was tortured in Guantanamo and eventually found his way to freedom because the German government began raising hell.
Okay.
And one of the things that he was told, and frankly, if I was an Israeli, I'd be really uncomfortable about this because this fans the flames. Or if I was, one of those hardcore supporters of Israel, I'd feel bad about this because, again, it fans the flames.
Yeah.
One of the things he was told when they first, they slapped a diaper on him and put him in chains and gave him a sedative and flew him away in the still of the night on one of those CIA aircraft. And the aircraft's been documented. The whole thing's been put together. It's all fact.
Yeah.
And when he got off the plane and was led blindfolded into a room, he heard a voice say, "Welcome to Israel, boy."
Mm-hmm. Yep, fanning the flame. I mean, what is security? Is that really the goal here, you know, when we're not going to be serious about our national security until we consider international security. And I was so happy to see that movie, Taxi to the Dark Side, win the Academy Award for the best documentary this year.
Yes.
And I didn't see the ceremony, but I guess the director, when he had his chance, said a few words about the political situation in the world. And so good for him. And it was sad to see Barack in that great speech he gave recently. And, you know, when I say something positive about Senator Clinton, I'm not dismissing Obama. I think his campaigning has just been a beautiful thing in many ways and kind of the movement developing around it. But it was sad to see during that speech something about, he made a comment about Israel being our stalwart friend in democracy or something like that. And it must pain him to say something like that, leave out the Palestinian people, because he's familiar with their plight. I think that's going to be another way in which they're going to try to, they're going to attack him over his relationships in the past with Palestinian solidarity groups and photos of him dining with Edward Said, who was a great man.
Yes, he was.
Passed away a couple of years ago. So he knows the story, you know, beyond Israel as our all democracy or whatever.
So, well, for me, I'm not anti-Palestinian. I'm not anti-Israeli. I'm also not pro-Palestinian. I'm not pro-Israeli. I'm pro-human being, and I'm pro-peace.
Great, yep.
And I do respect that of all the forms of government that are presently extant in that region, Israel seems to be the most representative of its people. To the extent that, I mean, there are far more pro-Palestinian peace activists in Israel than there probably are in the United States.
Yes, yeah.
And they are Israeli Jews.
The situation that their own media is more honest about the situation than ours is. Haaretz, which is like their New York Times, they have op-eds regularly that you cannot get published in the New York Times here, talking about the mistreatment of the Palestinians, the facts of the occupation, the illegal settlements, the prisoners, which include lots and lots of children regularly being killed, you know, throwing stones, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's interesting. So Israel is a cool country in many ways. And
if you counterbalance that, and I'm not one of these people who believes in democracy, you know, I don't believe in democracy at the muzzle of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not democracy. The only reason that Saddam Hussein was able to maintain a relatively stable secular state was because he was brutal in his suppression of dissidents. Syria is the same way. Egypt is a horrifying human rights abuser. It's almost not even worth talking about Saudi Arabia in this context, because Saudi Arabia is nothing but a gang of brutes.
Yeah, but it seems like it's such an artificial construct. Not to say that they haven't had their own issues in their own history, but time and time again, we are funding this police state structure that's oppressing so many people. Saudi Arabia does.
We absolutely do. Saudi Arabia is the classic case in point. We created Saudi Arabia by virtue of a deal with the House of Ibn Saud as a counterbalance to, of all people, British support of the Hashemites.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that so that we could get our foot in the door on that oil market in the early decades of the House of Ibn Saud took over the Arabian Peninsula. What, 1925?
That sounds about right.
And believe me, we had a stick stirring that pot.
Oh yeah.
And once again, let's look at the time frame, Preston. 1925. Who's in power in the United States?
Well,
we are smack dab in the middle of 12 tortured years of grab-it-while-you-can-get-it republicanism.
Yeah. And today, was that Woodrow Wilson's period? Or
well, no, Wilson's gone. Wilson is followed by Warren Gamaliel Harding, who had the common decency to die in office after fathering a bastard child in the Oval Office. He was succeeded by his vice president, Silent Cal Coolidge, and Coolidge was succeeded by Hoover.
Okay, that's right. I wanted to mention in Saudi Arabia, there's also that one of those private military contractors, one called the Vanel Corporation, and I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, they had some sort of terrorist training camp, basically, except they were training the Saudi Arabian National Guard, and they were working in conjunction with Lockheed. They had a big camp, and it was struck by a car bomb, and it killed about, I want to say, like 40 people. It wasn't covered a lot, and it wasn't held up as, you know, it was interesting how muted the coverage was. You know, people might come to understand Vanel, what's that? You know, they might ask questions and, you know, learn something new. And, you know, so it wasn't spoken about much, but it was interesting to note there's a militant resistance going on. And, you know, so many other countries. Back to Israel, you know, domestically, you know, there are more freedoms than some countries. But externally, you know, what they do, of not just the Palestinians, but during the Guatemalan genocide, enough popular pressure here in the U.S. created some obstacles to getting weapons to Guatemala and Rios Montt and the military dictator televangelist, actually, Rios Montt.
Oh, yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, good friend of Pat Robertson's. Israel became a conduit through which weapons could be trafficked into Guatemala. So it's sad to see those sorts of events, for sure. So, you know, democracy, not quite. But it has its good elements, but real problems, too. And
well, I don't think the problem lies within democracy in and of itself. It lies within the manipulation of the concept of democracy by people of bad will motivated by evil designs.
True. You know, Saddam Hussein, towards his last years, he was actually doing some popular things with his government. He was offering things like to bring back poets, to have this huge poetry festival.
Saddam was the one who was actively engaged in the restoration of Babylon.
Okay.
Which was a magnificent edifice, which we went on to spray paint with Semper Fi.
Yep. He was talking about pan-Arab solidarity.
Yep.
To defend themselves against imperialism and words we're not supposed to use in this country. A mixed. He was dealing more, having live cultural exchanges with France and
but this, by the same token, at the same time he was doing all that, he was doing that for his Sunni minority. There's no argument that the Shia in the south of Iraq ever prospered under Saddam Hussein, except to say, Preston, that when Shia or Sunni went to the wall switch and flipped the switch, the lights came on. And when they went to the tap, they got water out of it that didn't have worms in it. We are 5 years into the Iraq occupation, Preston, and the water in Iraq, the public water supply that comes out of the tap, has worms in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Boy, there's some American know-how and ingenuity, huh?
Yep. And
The water that our soldiers bathe and shave and do their laundry with is poisoned. What KBR did that to them. How do we possibly expect that KBR is going to deliver worm-free water to people that they consider to be subhuman in the first place?
Yep.
Sorry.
That's right. No, it's a great points. Definitely. I just saw a couple of ladies from Code Pink on C-SPAN, I think yesterday, and talking about the realities that we so rarely hear about of how we destroyed Iraq. And, one of the rationales for going in was to, save women. You know, we're worried about Saddam's sons raping everybody in rape rooms. And it was going on. Well, since our liberation of them, things have just gotten worse. Thousands of women now have been disappeared, most likely being trafficked in the sex slavery trade to other countries, Dubai, probably servicing U.S. troops. These brothels always pop up wherever we have a new base. So, they're probably there. Others are dying. They're much more likely to be kidnapped. They can't move around without a burqa, whereas before in Saddam's Iraq, as awful as it was, women didn't have to wear a burqa. They had a lot of PhDs and other degrees.
The Chaldean Catholic Archbishop was found tortured and killed not too long back in Iraq. Now, this is a sect that has been around for as long as there's been anybody calling themselves Christian. The Chaldean Catholic Archbishop did not have any problems under Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there were mixed Sunni Shia communities, people intermarrying.
What you're seeing in Iraq is a replay of what you saw, happen more organically, if you can use a word like that in terms of such a brutal, bestial situation. What you see in Iraq is a replay of what you saw after the death of Marshal Tito in the former Yugoslavia. People who were compelled to live together in peace decided that once the guy was gone who made them do so, that they weren't going to do it anymore.
Okay. Michael Parenti has written some interesting stuff on Yugoslavia that I keep meaning to dive into a little bit more. I think he wrote a book called To Kill a Nation regarding Yugoslavia. And, yeah, that was a devastating bombing there.
Yes, and what was done to Belgrade was arguably a violation of every sense of what it means to commit a war crime. It just was,
mm-hmm.
And it was an attempt to do. It was sort of like what Carolyn Kay was talking about. It was an attempt in the judicial case she was describing. It was an attempt to right a wrong by committing another wrong. And, you know, that's never going to come out well.
Mm-hmm. I noticed a couple months ago, Panama had a day of mourning to recognize the lives lost in our liberation of Panama, you know, from Manuel Noriega, right, the narco-terrorist. I mean, these liberations we do. I mean, as an analogy, we had this rapist in my neighborhood a couple of years ago, and, you know, doing hideous things. But, you know, what would have our response been if the police had decided to start dropping 1,000-pound bombs in the neighborhood? Because, oh, we thought he was in that house. Sorry. Oh, thought he was there. Nope. You know, we wouldn't accept it, but we sometimes accept this rationale when we try to apply it to this industrialized slaughter that we apply to Panama and Iraq and Afghanistan. Who knows how many people have been killed there? Hugh Hewitt, who postures as a Christian, celebrates that we're killing these people in a way that we mow them down and stack them up like cordwood.
Yeah.
And he's proud. You read these books like Imperial Grunts, and they celebrate our imperial. You know, we're not supposed to use the word imperialism, but they use it. These,
yeah,
you know,
well, they use it in a laudatory form, Preston.
Yes, yes.
They're proud of it.
Yes.
They want to be one. And I, for the life of me, I can't understand why anybody would, and maybe that's the problem here, because I was about to say why anybody with an iota of historical perspective about them would ever want to be an empire, because all empires collapse. It's a steady progress toward entropy, and subsequent collapse. Why would you want to be one?
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about before. They've got this theology that says that's okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that this time God's going to bless it.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, you've got Switzerland. There's no Swiss Empire, never has been, and Switzerland functions as the world's oldest democracy. But it has only done so because it has not sought to extend its power or its reach over other peoples.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems to be fairly clear to me.
Yeah, but, you know, they try to drill into our heads an inevitability of this way of the world, that it has to be as this.
But see, that's, yeah, out of this comes why you wind up with hissies over Reverend Wright. Because all Reverend Wright did was in large part speak the truth.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, just a couple weekends ago, I heard this replay of Rush Limbaugh, and he said, "We're a great nation because we're the greatest ass whoopers ever to be on earth. We, you know, we are a war nation, and we can
take away the gun. Take away the guns, and I would not put any group of Marines, any group of special forces, any group of anybody, and I'm talking about just, you know, brute strength on a battlefield. I would not put up any modern American army unit against one of Alexander's phalanxes. I wouldn't put him up against a Roman legion with the same kind of weaponry, you know, the shields and the spears and stuff. We'd get slaughtered. We're not the biggest badasses in the history of the world. We're the most well armed.
Exactly. You know, and we've drifted away from any like concept or concern over the notion of a fair fight. I mean, a lot of our warriors are now sitting in a computer room outside of Orlando operating these drones and wiping out, you know, a dozen people at a time, where they're grouping, you know, they must be some kind of terrorist cell. Let's go ahead and blow them away. I mean, it's...
Meanwhile, I mean, you've mentioned these, especially these Latin American countries, it has gone without saying, literally, that here on this, you know, so-called Holy Week, well, not long before it, between March the 4th and the 7th, in Colombia, four union leaders were murdered in cold blood in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
Two other social leaders were murdered as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they were done with the open, you know, not the tolerance, not the nudge-nudge, wink-wink, but with the open encouragement of the Uribe administration in Colombia. And now George Bush has come out and said that he will force, by God, he will force the Colombian Free Trade Agreement.
Mm-hmm. And so Jeremiah Wright, the aptly named Jeremiah, comes along and provides a voice from those who have been getting their asses whooped. And, yeah, they're angry about it.
I would say that there would be something profoundly wrong with those who aren't.
Yep, exactly.
But he's an emotionally healthy guy. But the Republicans, as John Dean pointed out in Conservatives Without Conscience, are children, okay? They may be walking around in the bodies of adults, but Preston, they're babies.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't take anything more than a mythologized bedtime story version of the American experience. And you have to say that we're always good. We operate on the side of good. We operate for Jesus.
Yep. We've got this radio host here named Dan Kaplis who talks about the world as in like a sports term. It's we've got to win. We've got to win, win, win. Be on the team. We're the winning team. You don't want to lose. And it's just, I would say baby talk, but I don't want to be unfair to babies, you know.
Yeah. you know, let's do something here just for a second, because I'm fairly certain that it has not been done on any other medium in the country in this week.
Okay.
I got this list over at Huffington Post. Somebody needs to say the names, Preston, of the people who were murdered in Colombia.
Yeah.
And make those people real. Mario Zuluaga, Ramiro de Jesus Perez Zapata, Israel Gonzalez, Jose Ibrahim Suarez Leal, Jose Martin Duarte Acero, Maria del Carmen Mesa Pasochoa, Arlette Benavides Zamboni, Carmen Cecilia Carvajal Ramirez, Leonidas Gomez Rosso, Rafael Boada, Hildaro Antonio Gomez Alzate, Carlos Burbano. At last, was a member of the Hospital Workers Union. They were all murdered since January in the nation of our good friends in Colombia.
Upholding democracy against those terrible socialists who, I want to mention, I went to makethemaccountable.com. The website of your friend Carolyn Kay, and she has a story that I wanted to mention.
Please.
On U.S. blocks Venezuelan purchase of food. Quote, the war with the U.S. has already begun and they are blockading our purchases of food, said Venezuelan Minister Ramon Rodriguez Chacon, told Venezuelan TV on March 12th. His statement came at a time when the U.S. is threatening to add Venezuela to its list of terror-sponsoring states, and some senators are calling for a full blockade of the country. Much bigger story, I believe, than this breach of passports. You know, that deserves some attention, but we've got some other let you go. I really appreciated this dialogue, but I want to hear your other callers. Something else Susan mentioned was she noticed how Barack didn't mention coal in his mention of the energy policy. And I actually had noticed the same thing, although I was thinking of nuclear as well. And sadly, he's very connected with the nuclear power industry.
He has profound connections to the nuclear power industry.
Yeah, and he always leaves that out. And they do see it as a green technology, or at least carbon doesn't release so much.
Well, it's
carbon.
A sort of a glowing arsenical green, Preston.
Exactly. And certainly in the mining of the uranium, and you know, that releases lots of carbon, and the milling and the processing. And, you know, we're all supposed to be concerned about yellow cake and uranium and loose new material, and here we are digging it up as quickly as we can.
And making deals for it in Central Asia.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still horrified by the Bill Clinton story. I just am. I expect better of people. And I expect better of Bill Clinton and going swanning around Central Asia with a guy who said, I just want to ride along with you, Bill, whether Bill actively or didn't, and it's my understanding he didn't actively do it, but he just let his cachet be used as a lever to get a uranium deal for an American uranium conglomerate. And that bugs the hell out of me. It just bugs the hell out of me.
Yep. And, yeah. So I guess a last note, TDS has been airing a series called E Squared, you know, E and then 2.
Yeah.
And they do cover some new nuclear developments in ways in which it may be, I don't know, just some other ideas around nuclear power. I'm still against it. But I think more importantly, what this E Squared series does is they talk about the wind and the solar and designing communities that are more pedestrian friendly. You know, I think the answer to so many of our issues are not just new technologies, but looking back to our old designs of our, you know, some of our great old cities that are very pedestrian friendly and conducive to light rail and, subways. And when I was in Venezuela recently, I found out Caracas has this great subway system. You know, actually, at least as good as the one I experienced in Philadelphia. And
don't hear much about that, though, do you?
No, you don't. And so, you know, I think it's part of what demoralizes us, and we buy into that narrative that it's inevitable. You know, in the absence of the good news, and there is good news going on, we do become susceptible to that, you know, that despair. There's a very interesting substitute for Randy Rhodes the other day called a guy named Lee Rayburn, I think. And he talked about how as progressive community, are we experiencing like post-traumatic stress disorder? You know, we're seeing all this horrible news, and he was focusing mostly on Iraq and the powerlessness that people feel sometimes, and kind of an emotional defense to turn.
Oh, I don't think there can. I don't think there's any way of getting around the idea that there is a pathology at work, Preston.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that you know, learning about some of the great things going on, I think, is the part of the cure or part of how we heal ourselves. And so I didn't want to leave on a note of just, you know, terrible things.
I understand.
So I at least wanted to mention E Squared, and I think, you know, and Barack as well. I'll notice things in his speeches that are missing, but he is doing a lot of great stuff, and more importantly, I think there are people being inspired to, you know, make their contributions. And instead of him worrying about making good decisions for us, we become a community in which we make our own decisions.
Yeah, precisely. Preston, precisely.
We don't need leaders. We need followers who are taking their orders from us.
We need a lot less top-down and a whole lot more bottom-up.
Exactly.
I mean, does that make sense?
That's it.
Yeah. Been learning a lot about bottom-up decision-making lately as I've been slowly making my way through Collapse. What a book. What Collapse. A book. Jared Diamond. Yeah, the follow-up to Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Okay. I'm reading Free Lunch right now.
That's on my list. I got to get to it. I've read a bunch of excerpts, but I got a feeling that you don't only get a real sense of the horror when you take it in a lump.
Yeah, yeah. It's corporate communism at its the most elitist. David K. Johnson. People are interested. Yeah, great work and great speaking with you, Bob.
All right, Preston. You have a great holiday weekend, and I'll look forward to hearing from you again soon.
You bet.
All right, take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. We're just going to keep rolling along. Never mind the hour three intro and stuff. People are on hold. You want to get in on the conversation? We're running out of time.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene.
Hold on. I'll pull you off the speaker. You come. Anyway, what to say after Preston's call? That was awfully remarkable. I was just going to call in and tell you, what's wrong with being a single-issue voter? I mean, after all, that's how the Republicans got us into this mess. And I think you as a single-issue voter would be smarter than any one of them.
Yeah, but there's a danger to it. However,
oh yeah, there's a danger. But come on, I mean. I guess my point is, we're in such a doggone pickle that danger, given the choices we've got, I mean, unless you're going to be really a whack job and vote for Nader, which I know you won't be, that danger is fairly remote. I mean, we've got our choices are between Obama or Hillary or McFame, and geez, I guess I'd say I'll tell choose the danger I'll say check it and vote my issue, because my issue is mainstream enough that it affects everybody. I mean, you're just not gonna be that far out, I don't think. So there's my 2 cents on that. And regarding Washington County and the coal, I thought you'd like to know that, let's see, I guess our local peak oil group went and talked to the county commissioners, and 80% of them didn't think there was a problem with Washington County getting its coal from Montana, or getting its energy from Montana. So what we did as of yesterday, we went to all the city managers throughout the county, and we spoke to them. So I wasn't present for that, but we did get some mail back on that, so that's where that stands as far as our local issue here for energy and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just thought you'd like to know that. And,
well, I do, and you know, I'm proud of it. I know that, and I'm not telling any tales out of school or anything, you expend a lot of energy and a lot of effort getting to meetings and going to them, and you know, with a few thousand more people like you, we could stop talking about these issues, because that bottom up change that Preston and I were just talking about would take place.
Yeah, I'm reading The Great Turning right now. That's what they're talking about. That's what that guy's talking about. So you know, it's just fantastic. And I was so mad this morning when I didn't hear about anything about the passport story on our local aid.
Oh, didn't that just drive you nuts?
Oh, God. It's like,
Gene, you saw it coming, brother. I mean, last night, when it's not even the lead story on MSNBC, it's underneath a story about traffic cameras.
Yeah, that's true, and I know the AER is getting a lot less liberal than they have been, but it's still a shock when you're a liberal station.
But it's not just it's not just AER. Please,
yeah,
please, it's everybody else too. It's,
I know, but I mean, it's like
just
it's
gone down the memory hole. Goodbye. What was that? The passport?
Oh,
who?
Yeah. I just heard from a friend on IM that says, Oh, apparently there's NBC is reporting that they looked at all the candidates.
And isn't it funny that they didn't know from Shinola about nothing? You know, it was, we know nothing, we didn't do it, we wasn't there, and even if we did do it, we was only following orders. You know, last night, that's all it was. So today I get up and it's like, wow, I looked at McCain's and Hillary's toe.
Oh, yeah, like that's supposed to make it better.
Right. See, where it's not the Bush administration spying. This was just curious people. And they all looked at McCain's and Hillary's every time they looked at Obama's, all three times. But they didn't all do it together, and it wasn't all the same people. Okay, see, there's nothing here. And
well,
Michael,
we're all curious. Why don't they just release, if they're going to be that flippant about it, just release it to the public. We all like take a look too, I'm sure.
Well, no, please understand that it's all the State Department has already announced that it won't even give up the name of the alleged contractor.
Oh, of course not.
And so, you know, unless there's some real the real display of spying in the Congress, as Mark Levine noted, the case is going to be spoiled by the Inspector General. The witnesses are all going to have time to get their stories together, and boom, there you go. Nothing here. Because the one reason that the Watergate thing broke was because pressure was applied to the burglars.
And it was applied in a fairly timely manner. Besides,
bingo.
So
timely. Time is of the essence.
Yeah, it is, but more than any of them like to know too. Well, anyway, I'm gonna let you be and catch to another caller, but I just wanted to chime in and good luck on your primary decision.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate it. All right. Take care.
All right.
Have a great weekend. Later, Gene. That's our head news ninja, Gene, also out in Oregon. And let's see if we've still got somebody here, or did they give up? Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, you can't ever get me to give up. This is Albert. How you doing?
Hey, Albert, what's up, man?
Oh, boy, it's snowing again. This winter just won't end.
Ah, spring.
Won't end.
I mean, this
is, almost had it.
This is March 21st. I mean, aren't we somewhere close to spring?
I think, I don't know. I'm at the point now, I've had so much snow and sub-zero temperatures, I think it's just going to continue. I'm just going to make some soup and...
Well, that's the upside. You've still got soup weather.
It's unbelievable. It's just, I woke up this morning, had a lovely night last night, it was, had the windows open yesterday, and all of a sudden now... So where are we at? Where are we?
It's like the little snowflakes fall in the shape of a middle finger waving at you.
That's what it's feeling like. It's really, I'm on strike. I'm not shoveling nothing. Mm-mm. The sun can do it for me. I'm done.
You've gone solar.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know. I mean, you got so many problems. I got my cars in the shop. It's just like, you know, I don't need this, and I'm not even going
to. Sure would be nice to have a little Bear Stearns Albert bailout, wouldn't it?
Right? That's what I'm talking about. And, you know, Dana Perino thinks the $1,600 that's coming, or $1,800, whatever it's going to be, is coming our way, is going to, I don't know, float to people in the tent cities that are springing up all over the country.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of those.
Oh, isn't that just lovely?
Yeah, you know, back in the day, they called those Hoovervilles.
It was Hoover 2, sucking more.
Yeah. Let's see. It was Hooverville, so this should be Villa Bushista. You know, give it kind of a Tony sound to it. You know, put some yellow crime scene tape around it and call it a gated community.
Now, isn't what he's been doing just, I mean, to me, this stuff... And it's getting too late to hold anybody accountable, I realize that. Hopefully history...
I hope the hell it's not too late, Albert.
I don't know, Bob. Nobody can... I mean, come on. You know, like, listen. The white... You know how I am. But the white preachers over here can say, oh, it's the gays and the queers for not...
Oh, speaking... you have a genius for this sort of thing. speaking of the white preachers... Let's go there. Why the hell not?
That's right.
Got a little video for you.
All right, bring it on.
This is McCain's spiritual guide. Now, remember, everybody said that Reverend Jeremiah Wright was crazy and un-American for his remarks about the source of HIV/AIDS and its purpose. Remember?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. So we're going to go to the Reverend Rod Parsley, the McCain spiritual advisor. Here we go.
If I were to call for the sterilization or elimination of an entire segment of society, I'd be labeled a racist or a murderer or, at very best, a Nazi. Yet every single year...
Notice how, at best, it's a Nazi.
At best.
Millions of our tax dollars are funding a national organization built upon that very goal. Their target? African Americans. That's right. The death toll, nearly 1,500 African-Americans a day. The shocking truth of black genocide is next on Breakthrough. Right now, our own government is allowing organizations like Planned Parenthood to legally take the innocent lives of precious baby girls and baby boys, and even footing the bill for it all with our tax dollars, turning every single one of us into accessories to murder. That's right, your taxes murdering innocent children.
He must be talking about Iraq.
Yeah, he must. That was the first thing I was thinking about, accessories to murder. Let's see what we got about
it. No, sorry, he's not talking about Iraq. He doesn't care about any little Iraqi babies.
Well, no, because they've actually breathed air.
Yeah. But wait, there's more, Albert. There's more.
Okay, all right.
And you know who their biggest fans must be? Well, that must be the Ku Klux Klan, because the woman who founded this organization detested black people, not to mention poor people, not to mention the handicapped, but African Americans were number one on Margaret Sanger's list. So this Lady Macbeth, as I like to call her, studied the works of Englishman Thomas Robert Malthus and embraced his plan of eugenics. Now, if you don't believe me, we'll have the shocking evidence from my guest, Dr. Johnny Hunter, in just a moment. You'll also discover today how we can join together in an amazing new way to save the lives of those babies before the abortionists get their hands on their lives. But right.
But Rod, what are you going to do for the babies after they've done been born, brother? Well, then they're on their own.
Exactly. Oh, man, it's just amazing. And, you know, it's actually funny. I don't know if it's been mentioned or what, but, yeah, there's something interesting about Barack's preacher. He just happens to be a Marine and served in war. And came back to, I mean, correct me if I've read the wrong information, but didn't he serve in World War II or Korea as a United States Marine, and he came back to this country and he couldn't even drink out of the same water fountains? Now, besides the fact that, I mean, he was right on most of what he said, and besides the fact, I think, you know, personally, from what I heard of it, what Barack Obama said in terms of his speech, that scored some points with me. It was pretty honest. It was pretty, you know,
yeah,
pretty straightforward and pretty, you know, human, I thought, of what he said. It sounded organic, actually. So, yeah, you know, this whole uproar about this crap is just, you know, it's just more nonsense. It's more distraction. It's just more BS. And, you know, it's even funny. Did you see the Fox News and Friends? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, where Kilmeade walked off the set.
Oh, Chris Wallace actually yelled at them.
Yeah, Chris Wallace yelled at him, but Brian Kilmeade got so disgusted with him, he walked off the set. I think the glue's getting a little loose on the beams there at Fox, isn't it?
Oh, we can only hope. We can only hope. I mean, those...
Well, first it's bed bugs, then it's Kilmeade, and then it's Wallace. I mean, this is not good.
No, and I thought he was smart. I thought they were, you know, and then I saw these guys talking, and I was like, wow. I mean, Chris Wallace has to look sane next to them. I mean, it's an amazing, you know, dichotomy right there. It's just insane and insaner. It's just amazing. But
where's the outrage over this goon Rod Parsley? Why isn't anybody calling on McCain to deliver a speech denouncing him?
Because
he's white.
Yeah, oh, no, it couldn't be that. No, it would be racist now.
I mean, the guy doesn't even, the media had him absolutely purple, polka-dotted, blue, screaming, hissy. I mean, they had kittens with crocheted tails because Reverend Wright said, God damn America. And Reverend Wright said that HIV was a curse on the black community. Well, here's this guy who's saying that there's 1,500 black babies, and he makes it sound like there's just black women lined up around the block. Will you abort my baby, please? Oh, thank you. But in fact, the how it is when you start dealing with facts, they turn these televangelist huckster charlatans into pure unmitigated filthy little liars that they are. Yeah. There's only one problem with all of Parsley's statistics. More white women have abortions every year than do African American women.
Yep.
It's just the truth. That's all. It's just a fact.
No, don't let the pesky little facts get in the way of anything. We're on a religious crusade over here. I mean, we got to get ready to bomb Iran, and we got to get ready to take over Venezuela. I mean, they have our oil, and they're gonna, you got Iran. They made $70 billion this year in oil sales, right? Now they're gonna switch that over to the euro. We've seen where the dollar has gone. It was actually a little rush. Right? I got to give it a little credit. It did a little rush of 10 cents or something like that. Oil, Monday hit $111 a barrel. And here we are talking about corn over here. Now, see, me, I don't know. I haven't been keeping you up to date. I've been thinking of opening up a pizza place, a real pizza place, over here in my local hometown. And I want to use all local ingredients. I want to, I've been talking to my local butcher and my cheesemaker. And
you do it, and we'll run ads.
Oh, no, it's my town's a little small, but anyhow, everybody's excited about it. Everybody's, I'm excited about it because it'll actually be real good food and, everything else like that. Wood ovens, I'll get the Amish to cut my wood, and I want to be sustainable.
But it's got to be, but Albert, just one little piece of marketing.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're going to say.
It's got to be Alberto's Pizza. You got to put, so that, you'll sound authentic.
Well, you got me on that one, but no, I was just going to say it's the price of wheat. Now I'm looking at the price of wheat. It's $70 a bushel.
The flour's going to wear you out.
Oh, man. I'm scared. I'm scared to death. I'm scared. I mean, I'm scared.
Fortunately, as a brewer, you do know how to culture your own yeast. I think of everything.
You're certainly, that's the whole point of having a good bread. And I know we don't want to get NPR on and start all of a sudden start talking about pie, but when we got serious things to talk about. But just to end it on a little light note, I mean.
No. I'm all for talking about pie. I could use a good one. There's not a lot of good. Well, we're very fortunate. We've got a little boutique gourmet pizza place across the river here that when I can afford it, I like to take the family to because it's, oh man, they're yummy. They do a Cuban pulled pork pizza that is to die for.
Oh, that does. That sounds very interesting.
Pulled pork, creme fraiche, pineapple, cilantro, and that sort of crumbly farmer cheese.
Okay.
And lots of jalapenos. And wow.
We got all of that. We got all that here. I mean, I really do. I live in. It's really an organic mecca. Just to. Yeah, this is a little bit of hope for everybody. Here, ready?
Yeah.
They have now been able to duplicate the crops in terms of yield for organic crops and conventional crops. I think that's good news.
That's extremely good news.
If you actually look at one of the main reasons that people, we can't have organic worldwide, la 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 la, is because the yields aren't high enough. Well, wouldn't you know it? University of Michigan, they just did this whole little study over the past few years, and they've actually figured out the methods and this and that and this to make the yields equivalent to the conventional petrochemical agricultural business. And by doing this organically, well, that'll just mean cheaper, better food that's actually good for you, for everybody. And, I think that's something to be applauded in the world as of this week. Not that... It's hard. It's easy to be pessimistic in this day and age, boy.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. I try to keep a positive, somewhat positive mental outlook on things, but my God, I mean, you look at it.
But the thing is, you got to, Albert. In all earnestness, all seriousness, it's individual people doing positive things that creates a positive outlook.
Indeed.
And if you do this and you succeed at it, God, you know, how wonderful that will be. I'm thrilled at the prospect of it. I want to see people do this kind of stuff, and show other people that it can be done. You know, make sure as you contemplate this that you keep good notes, because you may be able to help somebody grow something somewhere else.
See, yeah, and that's actually kind of my idea. It's like, well, what can I do to, you know, because that's what everybody wants today. Well, what can you do to make some money for yourself and at the same time maybe do something better for your community? Yeah, that's kind of, you know, think globally, act locally, and that's kind of my whole deal here. I mean, I also realize that, you know, well, pretty soon I'm not going to be able to get tomatoes from California, and I'm not going to be able to get this stuff from Mexico or what have you or whatever. And I sit here and I look around and I'm like, you know, and all these people around here, it's the same thing. I mean, I got a beautiful cheese factory, RGBH free. I mean, and you know, that's just that. I mean, we have organic up the yin-yang over here. And it's like, I sit here and I look around, and there is not a single place. Seriously, in my town, I got about 2,500 people in this town, about 6,000 in the town over. So we do live in a little rural area. However, there is not one place, I mean, that's decent. And there is not one place in this town that you can take your family out to dinner for less than $20. Now, that's what I would love to do. I want to be able to feed a family of four with some pizza, a nice, you know, couple of some garlic knots, maybe some salad, and, you know, homemade Italian ice for $20 every
month. Beer? Tell me there's going to be beer.
Of course there'll be beer. I already told my friends that they're the brewers. I can get.
Yeah, see, that's the nice thing. You're in Wisconsin, as opposed to weird little places like this where you've got to go begging and pleading to the alcoholic. No, in Wisconsin, I don't think you're allowed to open a pizza joint if you're not going to have beer. But no, you're taking very, very positive steps, Albert. And if you can't tell, I'm really excited about this. Because, among other, do you remember the night that I, and, you know, you don't have to, I understand, you're not just sitting there listening every night. But I had that story about the Pizza Hut shredded cheese. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
This
pretty sure, yeah, it's ringing bells.
It's sprayed with silicone.
Yeah.
It's not even allowed by the FDA to be used in food preparation. It's an anti-foaming agent for boiling water.
Yeah,
and they spray the silicone with it to you know, for anti-clumping and keep it fresh. You know, I want to eat pizza that doesn't. Call me crazy. I don't think silicone brings a lot of to the flavor party on a good pie.
No, it doesn't. I can't even imagine that being an ingredient. I mean, and if you really want to look. Because I've been doing a lot of research, you know how I am with research and stuff, so I've been doing a lot of research on this whole deal in terms of genuine real pizza. Because if you think about genuine real pizza, this is one of the good things that I can kind of say about it, and one of the reasons that I'm kind of, you know, excited about it, is that, you know, the pizza places that started the whole pizza craze in this country, and then thereby the world, were in New York, Lombardo's and, Patsy's and all these other places. Okay, and most of these started up before the Depression hit. Okay, we're talking like 1909, 1914. I mean, you know,
it's po folks food.
But the thing is, they had to apply the Napolitano law. There's a pizza law, and essentially all it can contain is your dough, and your dough has to pretty much contain like organic olive oil. It has to contain, you know, such and such flour. It has to.
It's a Rinheitsgebot for pizza.
Pretty much, exactly. It's like the kosher law, and it has to contain fresh cheese and this and that and this and that and that's that. I mean, it's literally got five ingredients in it, and it's such a simple thing that is completely. If you look at these corporate companies that just all they want to do is like Yum and all these other blah. They just bastardize things, and they put chemicals in it that are never supposed to ever be. I mean, man, I got a box of macaroni and cheese down here. There ain't a single thing that's recognizable in it. I mean, I won't even feed it to my kids because it's not food.
You won't
it's
feed it to your dog.
I wouldn't feed to my dog. I don't even know if I'm going to burn it because I don't want to inhale the stuff. Okay, and this is the kind of thing that is a good thing about what's going to be coming our way in terms of an economic total depression, recession, whatever you say. I mean, as long as you can maintain and you can feed your family, get some seeds, do all that good stuff, and, you know, kind of, you know, get your output less than, well, you know, all the things that people need to do in order to survive this wave. I mean, because I'm just telling you, this is coming, Bob. This stuff is coming. They're gonna make our economic life so horrible that we're going to beg to invade Iran. They're going to make price of gas so expensive that we're going to beg and volunteer. They won't even need to put a draft because people won't have jobs, and they'll just go into the military because it'll be the only way that they can feed their families. And I hate to be a doomsayer and all this other stuff, but, you know, what else do you see them doing? I mean, when we got more oil, and I know there's peak oil, too, and I know we got a lot of oil as well, but we go over here letting speculators run our oil prices up to into regions that, because we're so precariously balanced with our economics and just everybody's personal income, that we can't afford when gas goes up to $5 a gallon. We can't afford it when it goes to more than that. I mean, once it gets to that point, I don't know, my wife drives 60 miles round trip to work. Okay, now, that's not cheap. That's not a way that you could sustain it. Maybe she'd have to work a little closer to home. We got a little motorcycle scooter that I think we're going to see. We're going to see the Asiafication of the United States.
Yeah, as so-called developing nations move more toward automobiles, yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to see us moving more toward bicycles and scooters. And I like a Vespa. I mean, I love Vespas. I think they're really cool.
Oh yeah, they're fun. Oh, they're a blast, and they get great gas mileage.
I just look a little silly on them because I'm bigger than the Vespa.
You know. Hey, they make the bigger ones too. You know, don't worry about it. They make 600 cc ones. That
yeah, those are called four wheelers. No, I'm kidding.
No, they got a Honda. Man, they got them. They're amazing. They're getting more expensive though because Honda's not stupid. And they see the writing on the wall. So all of a sudden, these vehicles that when we purchased ours was around $3,000. And now we're sitting here looking at the same exact bike is about $7,500.
Mother.
Okay? Yeah, I know. It's moving up. And it's just going to be one of those things that just gets more expensive. I mean, my neighbor, he drives a Suburban all over the place with one person in it. It drives me nuts. And I'm like, well, however. I used to have an 87 Honda, and he bought it from me. Why? Because it gets 32 miles per gallon.
Oh, you're gonna love this, Albert. You know, Obama was in Beckley yesterday, and he had a town meeting, and he took a lot of questions. And one fellow stood up and said, "I want to know what you're gonna do to help us with the gas prices." Huh. And Obama looked at him and said, "Well, you know, we've got to end the war." And he ticked off two or three other things, but he said, "At the end of the day, I got to ask you what kind of car you drive." And the guy goes, "Escalade." And Obama just kind of rolled his eyes and did with the shoulders, you know, physician, you know, heal thyself.
Yeah.
Yeah. How often do you take your fully leather outfitted Escalade off road to take advantage of the 4-wheel drive, power traction, dual mud flap system there, brother?
Anyway, they couldn't handle that anyway. Those things are.
No, hell no. No, not at all. So, you know, that was kind of cool. I got a couple stacked up here, Albert. Please keep me up to date with the plans. I'm so excited, and shoot me a note, and I'll send you a link to the little place. It's called Pies and Pints. You can find it for yourself. Pies and Pints in Fayetteville, West Virginia, and Dave and Kim have done a fabulous job with that. There's a beautiful little restaurant culture over there. Brian and Jenny at the Sedona Grill, and Dave and Kim at Pies and Pints. It's sustainable. It is possible. You can do it.
The way to do it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Give my love to everybody. I'll talk with you later.
Sure thing. And right back at you. And have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, you too. Bye-bye.
A snowless weekend, we hope. All right. Later, Albert. That's exciting. Make it better. Do one thing to make it better. Quick email before we go back to the phones. I am confirmed. Yes. Our pal Cindy writes in, "I am an expert on this. Today is the spring solstice. I have no problem remembering it. The shadows do a perfect straight line in my windows. And it's my birthday. I was born under Truman, and I remember the Kennedy campaign and all those years." Happy birthday, Cindy. If we could do a chorus of happy birthday, but we might get sued. Happy birthday, sincerely. We really, really appreciate all your thoughts and all of your input. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, the worst part of all this whole thing was Passport Gate. They took the stake out of Joe DeGenova and he got back up out of the coffin. It's like, they brought him back, and you're sitting there going, look, guys, remember, this is a guy in 92 who investigated it when they went through Clinton's, and they put out the word to all the embassies to find any paperwork on him. And amazingly enough, Joe DiGenova couldn't find any connection to anybody in the White House.
No, no. I saw the Washington Times account, the Mooney Times, and it was brilliant because at the end they did bring up the Clinton passport gate, and the Washington Times wrote, and this is nearly a quote, of course, that investigation revealed that there was no criminal conduct, and it was only for purposes of speeding up FOIA requests.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's why we put all the embassies on high alert to find any paperwork on Bill Clinton in the 60s.
Yeah, it was just a FOIA request. Never mind the fact that the Bush administration, neither one of them, has ever lifted a finger to honor one. But we'll forget about that part.
Well, the other part was last night, if you listen to them some of the overnight stuff I got up during the middle of the night, amazingly enough, the boys over at MSNBC were starting to blame Hillary for it.
You're kidding.
Oh, no. They were wondering what she'd had done with this.
Hillary did it.
Yeah. They started to bring some of that up.
You reckon they just drink the rot gut, or are they into the high-quality scotch?
Well, I figured they'd had some of the homemade stuff, the stuff that'll make you go blind.
Yeah, the stuff that's been filtered through the radiator of a 1972 Pinto and burns green when you light it. Yeah, the good stuff.
That way you give off a nice glow after you drink it for a while. You know how it is. But you know what I mean? It's got to the point now. Old thing I've got planned tonight is here in a few minutes I'm going to turn over to watch Bill Moyers. And let's see, I think Mr. Marr's back on live tonight, so I'll watch that. Well, like I say, anything on regular TV or on the cable, it's like I'm over it. It's like I say, if you watch MSNBC, well, first of all, if you don't hate Hillary, there's no point in watching it because you're not going to see anything on there that's not hating Hillary.
Yeah, I think pretty soon they're just going to be openly masturbating every time they mention her name.
I know. Well, it's just.
I mean, I'm not trying to be gross or anything, but don't be surprised.
But I mean, it's just amazing when you sit here and look at the list of people they have on their shows. I mean, it's like, say, you're just sitting there going, is there anybody here? like I said, be on MSNBC right now, you've got two options. You've either got to be a Hillary hater or you've got to be an Obama loyalist. That's only two groups left on. So,
It's tough, I tell you.
It's to the point now you're almost looking forward to look over at Larry King when he's doing some stupid thing that has nothing to do with the reality. Just so you can lose your mind for a short period of time. So, but it's just amazing some of this stuff. What was the one I sent you today? The one from Media Matters.
Hang on a minute. Wrong computer.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm sorry. There's so many good ones going on over there. What you're reading, you go, huh?
Yeah, there it is. Sorry, it took me a minute.
That's okay.
Yeah, so that's why NBC and MSNBC wanted Clinton's schedules.
Yeah, isn't that amazing how when they got hold of Hillary's schedule, that I think it was on Morning Joe either today or yesterday, I guess it was yesterday, that amazingly enough, about like 7 or 8 times they bring it up, and every time it's the first thing they get to is, well, here's where Hillary was while Bill was after Monica.
Yeah. Like I care.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they've been sitting there whining for a while. We have to have her record so we can check her credentials and all this stuff. No, they wanted to show where she was during the Vince Foster killing. Suicide, should say. But you know what I mean? They want to show exactly where she was, and they want to know exactly where she was on the times they knew that Monica was in the White House. It's like, guys, you all were sitting around crying that you had to know this, or you had to know what she was doing, when she went on certain trips. Well, you got it now, and it's like, well, we'll get around to that. Don't worry. But that's somewhere down the line.
Hey, you got through round one today, Luke.
Hey. I'll take it as it goes. You know how it is. It's one of those things. We, like I say, we figured, well, let's see now. Yeah, A, we get to go down to South Alabama. We get to play somebody down there. It's going to be so much fun. We're in there. We get to go play Louisville, if we're real lucky. And if we get done with them, then we get to go play North Carolina.
Yeah, but it beats the hell out of not playing.
This too is true.
Lose and go home.
Hey, like I say, the boys of Georgia, hey.
Yeah, pardon me, Luke, if I'm not sitting here shedding tears for you know, your look at the schedule.
Well, I understand.
I get Duke. I get Duke Saturday.
I know.
I don't get Duke in the finals or the Final Four or the Sweet. No, I get Duke round two.
You almost got to face the Cinderella team. There's Duke tried their best to lose it.
I would have just loved that.
Oh.
But no, sorry. No, we get Coach Weasel face.
Oh God. I tell you
when
what,
we get man, video, you'll be able to see me on the video going, you know, like little.
He always looks like he's just so happy, doesn't he?
Oh, I thought he was going to have a baby last night. I saw the footage.
Oh, that one and the and some of the others, they were sitting around, you know, such and such and such, playing teams, and it's like, and some of these things were just so dang blowout.
My brackets are just a mess. They are already a mess, Luke. Thanks, Western Kentucky. I thought about picking you, but I thought, I'll pick George Mason instead. You know, because I try to scatter a couple of the upsets in there.
It was like I said, the first round everything went the way it was supposed to. The second round, I think that's where you start seeing the upsets. Like, oh joy, thank you.
Well, I'll take an upset tomorrow. That'd be just fine with me. I'd love to see my boys the beat Coach Weasel.
Go right ahead. I'm pulling for you all the way on that. But anyway. Sorry.
That's all right.
I'm trying to get rid of the last of a cold.
I don't get a lot of people that I can do my brackets with on the air. So I'm sorry to have diverted your attention, but you know.
Oh, that's no problem. It's like I say, it's one of the things between that now and then we're starting. Just starting to get into college baseball.
Yeah, and hey, it's football spring training time too, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of all overlaps right at the same time. You can have a whole lot of fun depending on what you're doing, you know.
Does Coach Phil actually have a complete coaching staff at this point?
Yeah, he does. Well, we believe he does. We haven't heard of anybody else being gone.
Anybody else get busted lately?
No, not that we know of.
Our hotshot little running back has been arrested. Noel Devine.
Doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing.
They got bounced out of the local meat market disco, and he decided that somebody said something he didn't like, so they knocked him to the ground and kicked the snot out of him.
We learned one thing when I was in school that they always told me. They said, "Don't do anything you wouldn't be ashamed to tell your mom or your grandma."
Yeah.
You know, it's like I say, if you can't go up there and say, "Mom, here's what I did," or "Grandma, here's the tape. Look what I did." Said if you'd be afraid to do that, then don't do it. You know,
don't. Yeah, look,
voice
don't.
In the back of your head says, "Don't do it." It means it's there for a reason.
If it's 2 a.m. and you haven't scored yet, go home. It's just going to be one of those nights.
This is one of those nights that you know you're not going to bat 1,000. This is one of those nights that counts against 1,000. Just enjoy it and go home and say, okay, this was a nice practice night. We'll try again next tomorrow night or next Saturday night.
I mean, you're an athlete on scholarship at a pretty respectable university, and you're going to get into a bar brawl that could end your career?
That's what you have linemen for. You, go hit him.
And, you know, Noel's not a big guy, but apparently he's big enough to kick the snot out of somebody after they're laying on the ground.
You know how that is.
Doesn't take a lot of height.
You know how it is. After a good beer buzz, you think you can take anybody.
Yeah, but that's the thing about a nice beer buzz. I'm not one of those guys that want. I mean, I never understood the, I'm good and drunk, I'm going to get me in a fight.
I know.
I'm like, hey, let's talk. Put on some good music. You know.
Yeah. Usually me, it was just a way to pass.
Hey, baby, can I show you my etchings? You know, no, getting a brawl? No, not me. Sorry.
Like, why do I want to go bloody up my face or my feet, my knuckles, one way or the other?
Yeah. Yeah, my
like,
face.
That's something I'd planned to do tonight.
Yeah, my face can't take the rearranging because it wasn't in the best of shape to begin with. Hey, Luke, have a wonderful Easter and a good weekend, all right?
You do, bud.
Take care.
See ya.
Bye. You gotta give me my little sporting moment from time to time, okay? Please, thank you. Oh, yeah, you gave up. Doggone it, I was gonna get to you as quick as I could. But I guess that puts paid to another week. And honest to Pete, I had enough stuff to do hours and hours and hours tonight, but that's all right. Thanks for joining in. Really appreciate it. I do want to share something with you real quick. Came in from our dear friend Juanita. You remember we talked about Jonathan Weissman last night? This is the guy who wrote the story about Obama in Charleston and talked about the muddy streets of Charleston. Ain't got no pavement and hills, and ain't got much in the way of shoes, neither. Well, it turns out this guy's a real horse's ass. Really appreciate Juanita sending this along. Back in September, the Washington Post featured a post-politics hour. And this is one of those you're not... I don't remember having a hissy about this. But I would have if I'd seen it. Post-politics hour discussion on WashingtonPost.com. A reader asked Jonathan Weissman, and this is the question, quote, what could really shake up either of the presidential primary races between now and January? And said, I'm not talking about Osama blowing up the Sears Tower or 1,000 GIs being killed in Iraq next month, but regularly scheduled events or things within the campaign's control. How did Jonathan Muddy Streets of Charleston Weissman respond? Right off the bat. Well, how about Obama blowing up the Sears Tower? I never liked that building anyway. Just kidding, folks. Then another writer brought it up and said, did you really just joke about Obama blowing up the Sears Tower, or were you thinking Osama but wrote Obama? Either way, not funny. And Weissman said, well, I apologize. And this is the guy they've got traveling with him to cover him? Can we have just a bare modicum of something approaching journalistic? No, we can't have a bare modicum of anything approaching journalistic ethics. And I told you I would update you on the month's funding drive. I remain stunned and thoroughly grateful for what y'all do to support the network. And I wanted to let you know that we're only $900 at this point. Maybe $15 less than $900 away from meeting our March goal. We've got 10 days to do it. I'd really like to shut up about this between now and then. If you haven't supported the Horn before, and you can, your contribution would be immensely, immensely appreciated. Again, we're not some text site that's telling you that we need $40,000 a month. We tell you realistically that it takes $2,000 with nobody getting paid. It takes $2,000 to make this go every month. And what that means is computer parts and a $600 at least repair to our telephone box unit that we've just got to do soon but can't right now. It's a new compressor unit that we can't replace yet. It's the ongoing work toward building the standalone studio. And we tell you it's $2,000 a month. Fact of the matter, if you factor in the hole that we're in, it would be more like four. But we are $900 away from meeting $2,000 a month. So, if you can, please, please, help us keep being able to bring you these programs, not just mine, but Mark Levine's, and Peter Godbold's, and the Horn Section, and John Fox. Guy James runs his own program, and he needs help, too.
So, and Ben Birch is having to run fundraising at White Rose Society because of the shiv that got stuck in his ribs by Air America, because of the traffic that it cut down. I know it's hard to, you know, it's hard to hear all this stuff, but we do know what the listener numbers are, and I can't help reminding that, you know, if every single person hearing this program sent $10, I could shut up for 3 or 4 months, at least about the fundraising. I don't know if John has gotten, he told me this morning that he was working on getting the mailing address up in real plain sight on the website, but if you prefer to use the U.S. mails, there is a link to the mailing address under the PayPal buttons, but just for those of you who feel like jotting it down right now, it is Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Boy, PMB, it actually stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Or you can use the PayPal buttons on the website. And any way you choose to help, any way you choose to participate is fine by us, and it is profoundly appreciated by us. We're proud of what we do here at the Horn. Now, we're not quite the egomaniacs that some are, and we're not going to sit here and tell you that we're saving democracy or preserving freedom. We tell you what we do. We encourage a restoration of the American discussion, the American dialogue, and the American debate. And whether you contribute or not, your calls, your emails, your blog postings are always welcome here. That's all. Now, it may be that that sort of conduct and that sort of participation goes a long way toward actually saving democracy or fostering freedom. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that the Horn can single-handedly do that, because for anybody who tells you that a website can single-handedly do that is lying to you. Plain and simple. But as long as you choose to support this effort, as long as you choose to support this experiment, I'll be here, Mark will be here, Peter will be here, Guy will be here, John Fox will be here, and we will continue to add shows. This weekend, of course, you've got Night Sounds with Billy Shears coming your way, a chance to kick back, and Billy will keep at it too, as long as you make sure that there is a Horn that continues to speak. Okay? I mean, is that a fair deal? I hope it is. And I hope you all have a wonderful Easter weekend if you celebrate Easter. If you celebrate the more pagan aspects of the weekend, blessings upon you in so doing. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 129 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Stop by crmw.net and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, March the 21st, 2008. So if you're listening at shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern time on a Friday that is March the 21st, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate with myself and the guest, whom I will be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the breaks. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you'll find links to all of the guests, as well as to the guests' sites and audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. And tonight would be a good evening to join the chat room. We have a number of people there. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the Head On Radio Network main site. That's the headonradionetwork.com main site. And you can find the links to the other hosts and find out about the other progressive programming on the network, of which I'm only a small part. You'll find links there at headonradionetwork.com for the PayPal buttons. And if you'd like to help us out and participate in supporting the Head On Radio Network, as we say, the funds do not go in our pockets. The funds go to keep the cassetting and the CDs passing bits and the hard drive spinning and the CPU fans cooling. And